Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, December 14th, 2015, 2 weeks from Christmas. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call in number is 605-562-3140. Participant code is 385-698. We got open mics out there. Please close your mics. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You see our banners on the right-hand side of our web, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side. I'd just like to make one quick comment about the donations. You know, we are pretty much supported by just a couple of hundred people, and yet we have thousands of members. We really, if we ever needed money, we need it now. So if anyone could that hasn't been supporting us, please consider $5 a month or more. I don't think that's asking too much. We do believe in the widow's mite. Of course, if you can afford more, even if it's a one-time gift, that's good. We have a lot of things happening, a lot of papers going out. We just finished a small campaign. It cost us maybe about $1,000 to get it out with mailing paper and toner and everything. The next upcoming is going to be going to Congress, which we had read the paper. We have not gotten that paper out yet. Did we read? Maybe we didn't read the Congress one. I don't remember. Anyway, Congress is going next. If we didn't read it, we will be reading it, but I'm pretty sure we did. We've kind of held that back to get another paper out, which we're going to read tonight. It's a short paper, really responding to the clerks and their lack of response to us. We have been getting some responses from the clerks, though, but not as many as we would hope. And we'll talk more about that later. But nevertheless, Congress is going to be going out. That's going to cost us, $2,000 to $3,000 at least to mail that one out. We're operating in faith. We're starting to put together the work and getting ready the envelopes and mailings. And when we run out of money, we'll just stop and wait until we get some more money, until we can get that out. I'd love to get it out way before Christmas. I want to get it out the end of this week if possible. We're now working on a paper for the sheriffs, which is we have 3,134 sheriffs, or counties anyway. We don't have that many sheriffs because some counties don't have sheriffs. But we have about 3,000, a little over 3,000 sheriffs. And those who are supposed to be taking the job of the positions of the sheriff, we'll treat them as if they're constitutional officers. And we do have a paper we want to send to them, which is extremely vital. A vital message we need to get to them It's now time to go directly by mail or with a physical paper, filing in a court where they have to respond. 3,000 responses we're expecting. And so we're going to do it as a court case in all 94 district courts, and it'll be mentioned each of the sheriffs by name according to their districts, their federal districts. So again, I bring this up because we need money seriously. We need for that particular project, which we're hoping to get out in January. We're going to wait till after Christmas. So hopefully maybe the first week of January if we can achieve the goal. Probably going to cost somewhere to $6,000 to $8,000, maybe even more than that. I haven't totally calculated, but it's got to be up there somewhere. 3,000 papers going out. The mail alone, depending on the weight, is probably close to $3,000. We need support to do this. Only the people can save America. We don't have a rich uncle, and so we scrape by with everything we scrape by with. And so please do consider giving a donation to National Liberty Alliance for the sole purpose, particularly at this point in time, to get this message out. We have a lot to talk about these things, and we'll try to remember to bring all these things up. There's so much to talk about tonight. We'll see where we get to, and I'm sure people have questions. And we do have the answers. Anyway, now look into the God's Word. The scripture, tonight's scripture reading is Exodus chapter 20, verses 1 through 17. That's Exodus chapter 20, verses 1 through 17. And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make any unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water underneath the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, Jehovah thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generations of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. Thou shalt not take the name of Jehovah thy God in vain, for Jehovah will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day, keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy maidservants, nor manservants, nor thy maidservants, nor thy cattle, nor any stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days Jehovah made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore Jehovah blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which Jehovah thy God giveth thee. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not cover thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not cover thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservants, nor his maidservants, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. God's Word, Exodus chapter 20, verses 1 through 17. Okay, tonight's topic, we've got a lot of topics here, but we're going to start off with contempt of court to the chief clerks. We've sent this out to all chief clerks. We've sent it out one paper, actually two papers, but we sent one paper to every chief clerk, 94 of them, singularly with one name on each paper individually. And we filed that paper in their own federal district court. That went out in this morning's mail, 8 a.m. this morning. So it is moving through the system. Courts will be starting to receive that tomorrow, those close by here on the East Coast. And within the next 2-3 days, every clerk will have it. And so I'm going to read it. It's a short paper. It is available up on our website right now. Anybody who would like to follow along with it, you can go out to, just click on news. Click on the word news, top left side, welcome news, second tab. Click on news, and you will find all the papers here that we have filed in the past, 8 months or so, maybe close to a year we've been filing these papers. But anyway, you'll cut down. The first one is writ quo warranto, and the last one is clerk contempt with option to amend. Okay. Now, we did read a paper that was going out to all of the... where were we sending this one? I think it was... I don't remember. We did well. There was one that we did read, and we put that aside to get the clerk contempt out first. The clerk contempt was so important because we really wanted to put the pressure on the clerks and the judges. And by the way, Gary, this one here is ready for faxing to every elected individual in on the national and the state levels. Matter of fact, I think the way we have it written up and posted it is good. So, again, nationallibertyalliance.org, click on news and come down a wee bit. You'll see 13 papers filed, and underneath that you'll see the memos to the sheriff. We're number 13, clerk contempt with option to amend. On this paper, we have United States District Court for, in this case, the Middle District of Alabama, and it has the address. But this is filed in all federal district courts, so obviously there's 94 headings here. This is one of 94 headings. So we sent one to each clerk, and then we also filed one, so a total of about 188 or so papers went out this morning. Each chief judge for each district is named as the assigned judge. And we also named each clerk in their own district. So each paper has, again, its own unique name, its own unique judge, and its own unique district. And we start off with a warning. Bar lawyers are conspiratorially indoctrinated to suppress or ignore the common law, which are... Hang on a minute, I'm getting noise through here.
Hey, John. Just yeah. Tell people when they go to log in, if they want to read this, that there's a CAPTCHA that they have to put in and they won't get in. It asks a math question. Right. Yeah, in other words, people going to get this paper might have trouble, like I just did, because you got to answer the CAPTCHA, which is a math question, like 13 plus 1 is 14. I just want to mention that. Okay.
Yeah, but that's what you wouldn't logged in. That means you had to log in, and when you're logging in, that's when you talk. Okay, so everybody knows that. Yeah, we just recently done that. Because we started to get, we've been getting some attacks here or there little by little. And, you know, so we did set up something with a CAPTCHA. I think that's how you pronounce that. So you have to answer the question so they can't really bog down our server. Okay, warning. I'll start all over. Warning. Bar lawyers are conspiratorially indoctrinated to suppress or ignore common law, which are acts of treason against the Constitution and the people. Therefore, resting in the advice of bar lawyers constitute conspiracy. Ignorance or claiming you are only following orders did not work in Nuremberg, and it will not work in America. Title of this paper is Contempt of Court. Chief clerk, in this case, it's Deborah Hackett, but again, we've got 94 different names and 94 different papers. So chief clerk, hereinafter respondent, is directed to take note that from May 13, 2015 to date, the grand jury has filed 13 papers, including this one, case under case number 1776-1789-2015, namely, writ quo warranto, dated May 13, 2015, mandamus to sheriff, dated May 20, 2015, mandamus to judges, dated May 23, 2015. Mandamus on martial law, dated May 27, 2015. Mandamus on Second Amendment, dated May 29, 2015. Mandamus on terrorism, dated May 29, 2015. Mandamus on subversion, dated June 6, 2015. Mandamus to governors, dated July 7, 2015. Mandamus to the United States Supreme Court, dated July 20, 2015. Information concerning judges, dated October 14, 2015. Information concerning SWAT, dated November 5, 2015. Show cause to Chief Clerk and Chief Judge, dated November 13, 2015. Contempt of court, dated December 15, 2015. Whereas respondent, by way of grand jury, file on demand, was ordered to file under penalty of law, failure of respondents to file and mail proof of the same constitutes a criminal act and contempt of court. 18 U.S.C. 2076. Whoever being a clerk willfully refuses or neglects to make or forward any report, certificate, statement, or document as required by law shall be fined under this title or imprisoned no more than 1 year or both. Respondents took an oath under the law of the land to perform his duty as clerk with absolutely no authority to discriminate as to content or form of judicial proceedings of said documents. Furthermore, to the interception of said documents and or the filing of said documents under miscellaneous instead of under federal, under Act of Federal Case Number 1776, 1789, 2015, remove said document from active judicial procedures and therefore constitutes concealment and felony rescue. If respondent has been instructed or intimidated by a judge, magistrate, or any other court officer to perform this felony rescue, respondent is to inform the grand jury immediately as to the name of the court officer. Failure to reveal any such name and notify the grand jury of such person further constitutes felony and conspiracy. 18 U.S.C. 1512b. Whoever obstructs or impedes any official proceedings shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both. Justice is an unalienable right. People ought to have free access to the courts and public offices. Filing fees impede access to justice and services. Any decision respondents make to not file a document because of failure to pay a filing fee constitutes extortion. Preamble to the Constitution. We, the people of the United States of America, in order to establish justice, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Living as we do under a common government, charged with great concerns of the whole Union, every citizen of the United States from the most remote states or territories is entitled to free access, not only to the principal departments established at Washington, but also to its judicial tribunals and public offices in every state of the Union. Crandell versus Nevada. And by the way, access to judicial tribunals means the juries, grand jury or trial jury. When anybody impedes your need or desire to talk to them, or prevention to talk to them, that's what this is talking about. Crandell versus Nevada. American jurisprudence, constitutional law, subsection 326. Free justice and open courts, remedy for all injuries. In most state constitutions, there are provisions varying slightly in terms, which stipulate that justice shall be administered to all without delay or denial, without sale or prejudice, and that the court shall always be open to all alike. These provisions are based largely upon the Magna Carta, Chapter 40, which provides, we will sell to no man. We will not deny to any man either justice or right. The chief purpose of the Magna Carta provision was to forbid the king from selling justice by imposing fees on litigants through his courts, and to deal a death blow to the attendant venal and disgraceful practices of a corrupt judiciary in demanding oppressive gratitudes for giving or withholding decisions in pending cases. It has been appropriately said that in a free government, the doors of litigation are already wide open, and most constantly remain so. The extent of the constitutional provisions has been regarded as broader than the original confines of the Magna Carta, and such constitutional provisions has been held to forbid the selling of justice not merely by magistrates, but by the state itself. And again, that was American jurisprudence, constitutional law, subsection 326, which they are bound to follow under Article 6 of the Constitution. Plaintiffs should not be charged fees or costs for the lawful and constitutional right to petition this court in this manner in which he is entitled to relief, as it appears that the filing fee rule was originally implemented for fictions and subjects. Just again, just like the statutes are created for fictions, so corporations and governments, government agencies. Subject to the state of the state, and should not be applied to the plaintiff, who is a natural individual and entitled to relief. Hale versus Hinkle, U.S. We are aware of and are investigating and documenting the widespread subversion of the Constitution for the United States of America by the federal judiciary, and their intimidation upon respondents, and we have the ear of many U.S. Marshals, FBI agents, and county sheriffs as we continue to build our case, separating the wheat from the chaff. Indictments are imminent. We have been filing papers in all 94 federal district courts in an effort to provide our servants with the needed education with respect to their duties under the Constitution and to provide our servants with the opportunity to obey the law of the land. Their continued resistance is the necessary evidence of their crimes. Therefore, when the time is ripe, law enforcement will act and the opportunity to amend will no longer be available. Ordered and adjudged that this tribunal finds respondents in contempt of court. This court is gracing respondent with opportunity to amend error by providing proof of filing of the above said papers by time stamping the title page of each of the 13 documents filed with the courts and mailing to the above address. Respondents has 3 days to obey or face imminent serious legal consequences. The court, December 15, 2015, under seal, signature by the grand jury administrator. Again, titled Contempt of Court, Opportunity to Amend, 3 pages. Okay, so that went out into the mail today. It was an extremely important paper. It's priming the pump, so to speak, for the clerks. And the next is really, again, the sheriffs. And then we'll be picking up with some more memos and, of course, copying the sheriffs and all other elected officials on state and federal levels with all of the paperwork as we go forward. Again, with the intentions on alerting these individuals of the problems and also educating them and preparing them for the indictments. I do believe that at some point in time the indictments are going to go forward, and it's going to be when everything is ripe. It's very close, I think. What is very close, it doesn't mean tomorrow necessarily, but who knows. But I think we're very close. And but again, patience is a virtue, and God is building virtue and patience in us. And we're going to be patient, and we're going to wait for that time. We're not going to act too quickly. Many people have been trying to pull the trigger for a long, long time, for a matter of fact, for over a year now, maybe even longer than that, and it just wasn't time, and it still isn't time, but we are so close. You know, it doesn't make sense to do something before it's time, because then it doesn't work. It's not its time. Got to wait for its time. You know, look at justice, righteousness will always prevail over evil and darkness, always. And it's always, you know, it's the same story, the tortoise and the hare. And we have to be consistent, persistent, and continued pressing towards that mark. And we will come to that point at some point and be successful. Okay, a couple of things I want to just cover. First of all, I want to bring up the name Anna Von Ritz of Alaska. Claims to be a judge in Alaska. Now, we didn't know for quite some time whether she was a real judge or not. We could never find out. But what she had to say as far as laying out by what authority these people think they have, okay, she had laid that out quite well. And they are acting on a very false premise, a very unstable foundation, and we're going to make that very clear to them. These judges act upon what they claim. They think they're acting under law, and they think that they're safe because they're acting under law. But we are, little by little, showing them that there is no law at all, that law is null and void. There is no fiction that has any authority. We will not yield to fiction. We will not give reality to fiction. Anytime anybody walks into the court and tries to get standing, let me repeat that. Anytime anybody walks into a court and tries to get standing, you are acknowledging their power and you're giving reality to the fiction. You're feeding the monster. You have to reject and deny the authority. They don't have the authority. They don't have the jurisdiction. And you have to move your jurisdiction. And anybody who does not understand that is going to get hurt. Now, we've had people connected here to National Liberty Alliance. We might have brought this up once before. We're not going to bring names of these individuals. But we've had individuals who have went towards liens. And also one person who's in jail claims to be a judge just like Anna. Got elected a judge just like she did by a small group of people. They're developing their own governors. They're trying to get their own president. They're setting up their own prisons. They're setting up their own courthouses. And that is subversion against the United States of America. And they're applying trillions of dollars of liens upon judges. Okay? That is subversion against the United States of America. There is absolutely nothing wrong with our government. The government that our founding fathers initiated and set forth some 200 or so years ago is still there and still works. The process, the procedure, everything is there for the courts. And also for legislation and even the administration. The problem is not with government. The problem is with the tyrants who have taken control of our government. That's where the problem is. This is a, really we're dealing with a problem that is a criminal situation. So we're going to take, what do you do with criminals? You try them and you put them in jail if they're found guilty. And that's what we're going to do. And we're going to use the system to do it. And the system is resistant because the system is ignorant. The people running the system is ignorant. Sheriffs take an oath. They raise their hand. They swear to protect and serve the Constitution for the United States of America. And they haven't got a clue on what the Constitution says. Constitution is clear that there is nothing to impede my right to pick up a weapon and protect myself. And yet they can't understand the simplest of terms. We have been so brainwashed and watered down ourselves as Americans that we ourselves have fallen prey to the same thing, thinking we have to get permits and so on and so forth. That is true that many of us get the permits so we don't have to spend our time in jail as we're going to fight and go forward and get rid of these unconstitutional laws as time goes on. When we get into the courts, things are going to roll very, very quickly. It's going to go so fast, our head's going to spin literally. Well, maybe not literally, but anyway, figuratively, okay? But we're going to, it's going to be really an amazing situation because we're going to get a shot of justice like we've never got. It's going to be like adrenaline running through the system and through the veins of America. And that's where we're heading to. We're coming very close. Once we close down the criminal activities, the RICO on steroids that rules our judicial processes and our also our you know the administration itself, and also for the legislative body, once we start to remove these you know criminal elements that have set up this RICO system and becoming fat cats on, everything's going to change very quickly. And it's going to take some time for the American people to acclimate to this, but the changes will happen very quickly. And we're going to have to start re-educating our children. We have to get into the schools. We have people coming out of college that I don't believe even know who George Washington is. I don't think they even know who Thomas Jefferson is or Benjamin Franklin. And, you know, I don't know whether I mentioned this on a Monday night program, but I had watched a few cop shows here or there. And there was one thing, it was an FBI show or something. And they were chasing what they claimed to be was subverters or terrorists, okay? They were looking into a terrorist cell here in the United States. And when one group of federal agents was explaining to another group of federal agents, you know, what it was that they were investigating, they started with the head and they named the head. And the head person was nicknamed George Washington, and second in command was Benjamin Franklin. Well, they conveniently at this point left out Thomas Jefferson, of course, but nevertheless, He's probably the him and Washington is probably the well Jefferson and also Benjamin Franklin too. Any one of those people were lost, we wouldn't have America. Any one of them. And this goes in through to Adams and others. But in any event, there was another program I had watched on maybe another station or something, I don't know, and it was another cop-type show. And they were investigating terrorists and everything. And numerous times they mentioned that the founding father or fathers, that was the group, the people that were trying to find the founding father, the ones who started this whole terrorist movement, at least in that kind of a ring. And so they're priming the American people, those who are sleeping, to act adversely to the names of George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, and also Thomas Jefferson, to act adversely to the idea of the thoughts of being a sovereign or our founding, talking about our founding fathers. They take language and they turn it upside down on its head and they change its meaning. And there's a book out, I forget the name of it, something with pink elephant or something, I don't know. But there's a book out there, and the theory of the book ultimately gets the point across that if you tell an untruth 26 times, people believe it. So you keep repeating something over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, and it becomes part of the psyche. And it becomes part of the lingo. It gets embedded into the brain. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're sending out mantras. I remember many, many years back when I used to listen to Rush Limbaugh, he spoke about, he used to play the mantras in the news and how they used to go back. He does the same thing. You know, the left, the right, they're both the same. They don't care which criminal gets in. Sometimes they need the right criminal. Sometimes they need the left criminal. I mean, Bush was the perfect example of the right to prepare the way for this clown in the White House right now. To bring the left. Okay, so getting back to Anna von Ritz of Alaska, and I'm going to say this, and I challenge anyone to debate me on this or refute this, okay? There is no such thing as an Article I court. There is no such thing as an Article II court. I mean, an Article II court, and there is no such thing as an Article IV court. They have created what I think Anna holds the position of an Article IV court. And as soon as I heard that, I immediately went and opened my Constitution and to see what words could she possibly be using to refer to an Article IV court. Now, she holds this very, very strongly. She tells the truth of the process and how they took control and how they organized and how they structured the municipality out there in Washington, D.C. That's true. She does lay it out truthfully. And she lays out the different acts or laws that was used in order to do certain things in order to accomplish the goal. But it was all treason. It was all subversion. It was all fraud. It rests on no foundation whatsoever. And all we have to do, you know, here in his faith now, you know, righteousness, now those people who believe and understand that righteousness will always prevail. It may not look like it's going to, but it will prevail. You cannot stop the nature of God. You cannot stop his nature of light, of truth, justice. You can't stop that. There's no way. So we have a government full of darkness, and all we need to do is turn on the lights. It's the best cleanser to bring truth and justice into the court, truth into our, justice into our courts and truth into our political process. That's all we have to do. It takes time to do that. It takes time to make it so that it acclimates through the system. It takes time so people start to pick up and realize. We've been pumping the sheriffs for quite some time now, and they're starting to respond, okay? You know, at some point in time, they got to pick up the paper to say, let me read this thing, for crying out loud, finally, let me read this thing. Or some other sheriff has said, did you read this thing? What, yeah, those crazy. Well, I don't know that they're so crazy. You know, you should read this stuff, man. And when they start to see what it is that we say, what we're talking about. That's why the FBI doesn't bother us, because there's nothing they can get us on. We are purely responding in process and procedures through the judicial process in the courts. We are creating nothing of our own. We are using the Constitution and the laws of the land in order to to bring forth the light and the truth of the subversion from the enemy from within. And you can't hide it. And they don't want the FBI to read these things. After all, we may convert them. They don't want the marshals to read this thing. After all, we may convert them. They don't want any elected official to read these things. After all, we may convert them. So, anyway, this idea of an Article 4 is a fantasy in the minds of people. Now, I will tell you, with no uncertain terms, and I don't normally come out against people in a public fashion, but this is our venue, this is our platform, and we have to warn people of the Pied Piper, because there is a Pied Piper out there piping a message that looks real good, piping an idea that looks real good, and people are following along, and they're going to end off, and you know, right off into the bay, into the sea, because it's poison, and they're building a false foundation. When you give fiction a credibility and a reality, now you're giving them power. And the things that these people are doing is indeed subversion against the United States of America. Let me repeat this. They are creating, they're getting in their own governors, one for each state. They're creating their own courthouses, back of Denny's or, well, I don't know where they're doing it, but someplace. They also are preparing places to imprison judges. Okay, this is what I'm hearing in the grapevine. And these are the things we are so far away from, because that is insane. We don't need to create anything. We've already built our courts. We've already built our structure, our democratic process and our republican process. We've already built all that. We own that. We, the people, ordained and established it. It's ours. We just have to win back our courts and bring to justice these people who refuse liberty in America. These people who are the enemy of liberty, the enemy of justice, the enemy of anything that is good and right. These people are full of darkness themselves. So anyway, this Pied Piper is indeed this movement and this group who are collecting. And they, look at all of our enemies have ended up in this movement, opposite of us, because they're impatient. They want to do it now. They're not willing to wait. Okay, and they're following along, and this is the paperwork and the work of Anna von Ritz. Okay, and I can debate this at any given time, and I can show light very easily exactly where they're in error, and it can't possibly be. We are writing lots of papers, and we're in the process, which I'm very excited to get out, but it's going to take a little while longer. But maybe over the Christmas holiday, we'll focus our time on writing, because we are putting together a constitutional course. It is so needed, so vital. We need it now. Right now, we need it now. And we need to get it up on our website. We need to get sheriffs and any elected individual to take this course. And it's going to be pure, pure law. Pure, simple law. As Thomas Jefferson said, law should be in simple language, plain for the common person. Not that we're to talk down to the second, third grade level. You know, we keep it up on a higher level, of course. But it shouldn't be difficult. It shouldn't be, well, you know, we got to try to figure out what's being said. No, it's plain and clear. It's the English language. Okay, another thing, call to action. We started that last week. We're pursuing that every week. We have an active process going on right now, and I would like to direct everybody, and let's get the emails flowing for those who are in charge of that, the information out and going, okay? If you go up to committees, highlight committees on the top blue bar on the right side, go to committees, highlight committees, come down to courtroom observers, okay, highlight that. Don't click on anything till you get to call to action. Click on call to action. Every week we have two cases, and we're only doing two at a time because we don't want to overwhelm people. It's time for phone calls, just like we did last week out in Long Island, which I think was very successful. They put things off until the 9th of January, and we're not going to give up on that one. Also, with the mortgages, this is a mortgage problem, and with the mortgages, you know, we really started, we missed the ball on this one. And, you know, we're in a school of hard knocks, just like everyone else is here. But we missed the boat on this one. We didn't really pick up on the fact that these people wouldn't really go into court. There was no due process. This is a whole new ball game now. A whole new ball game. Now it's a matter of focusing in on the sheriff, showing him clearly, black and white, what the law is and what these people are doing and how it's a con job. And these sheriffs now, we're going to report the crimes, and we're going to expect these sheriffs to go make the arrests. We're going to expose the crime, do the indictment, bring it to the sheriff, and say, now arrest them. Whether you believe or understand that we, the people, have the power and the authority to run our own affairs, if you think some elected judges, I'll be polite here, if you think some elected judges have the power and the authority to rule over us, well, they got it all backwards. We don't elect people to rule over us. No, we elect people to do a job, and we define that job under the Constitution for the United States of America. And they're not to come outside of the boundaries of the box that we put them into. And when they do, they need to be burnt for it. And it's time for the sheriff to understand it. The sheriff needs to understand, and this is why this paper that we're doing on the sheriff is so, so important. Because this paper is going to bring it home. This paper is going to put it to the authority. This paper is going to have that sheriff's name on it. This paper is going to require that sheriff to respond. And that puts him in the game. And now he's got to look at us and consider something here. You know, we the people ordained and established. The very first grand jury, and this is what every sheriff in America needs to understand, the very first grand jury was brought together by the people themselves. 26 men came together and decided enough is enough, and we're gonna suppress this subversion of this unrighteous, evil king, and we're going to take his head unless he behaves. So I think it was 3 or 4 months later they renegotiated that, and they said if they have to do this, they're not going to take his life. But it doesn't mean they're not going to do everything in their power, and, you know, they'll take his castles and take everything away from him, but he'll save the life of him and his family. We're not going to take his head, at least not without due process. After due process, we'll take his head. But that's not my decision. That's the decision of any jury that makes that decision. We have to find these lawbreakers and just bring them to the courts of justice, to the halls of justice, and let the people decide. So we have this call to action going. People need to get involved, okay? Everybody needs to get involved, okay? So please, call to action, read this page, and respond to the two victims, their situations up here. And we're going to be talking in great detail, probably, I don't know, I can't say next week. You know, next week is the last conference before Christmas, and then the one after that will be right before New Year's, but I'm not sure what we have planned yet, but we may talk about the fraud of the mortgages, how they're pulling this off, which we have briefly talked about, but we're going to do it in more detail, I think. We're working on a paper to lay it out and try to keep it as simple as possible, and hopefully we'll be able to achieve that, and I think we will. So, okay, habeas corpuses. Anybody who has a habeas corpus in, we had, our last count was 105 papers filed, okay, for habeas corpuses. I know that number has climbed since then. I heard from Linda saying we're getting a lot of new calls, new people in. So that is coming up, and we've only gotten to 15 or 20 of them out of the 105 that we have in our system. And it's running a little slow. Again, you know, patience is a virtue. We have to be patient, and you know, we can't just run ahead like chickens without a head and just jump in and do this and do that and let's indict. And we haven't prepared, and nobody's listening because they can't understand. If they don't understand and they don't feel pressured and frightened by our authority, then we have no authority. You know, we can have all the good intentions you want, but if they don't fear the people, then they're tyrants, and we're in trouble. And that's what we're turning around. You know, I think it was Jefferson, or maybe Franklin, who said, when government fears the people, you have tyranny, but when the people, when the government, no, let me reverse that. When the people fear the government, you have tyranny. When the government fears the people, you have liberty. We have tyranny, but I can see clearly it is starting to move to liberty because they are beginning to fear us. We see it in judges. We see it in the way they respond. We see it what they say on the bench after we get our paperwork. You know, some of them arch their back up, but they still put it off. Okay, some of them are just so dumb that, well, that's fine. They want to get their heads cut off, and that's what's going to happen, you know. So, but there are sheriffs and marshals and FBI agents that are reading and are looking, and, you know, they know there's a problem. They know there's a problem. The FBI surely knows it. Okay, so habeas corpuses. If you have a habeas corpus in the system, get a hold of Linda, okay, and find out the day, the time, and the place of our meeting. We have a meeting once a week for all people who have habeas corpuses in the system. If you don't have a habeas corpus in the system, you cannot come to that meeting. This is just for those people. To assist them and talk with them and explain things to them and to help them keep the faith and patience and endurance. And that's what this meeting is all about. So unless you're in that group of people, you can't come to that meeting. And we try to keep it short, although, you know, they usually end up long, but I'm really working hard to make them shorter. Okay. Anybody that has a habeas corpus in the game here, in the works, and has a hearing date coming up, get in touch with Linda and let her know. And if your hearing date is like January 28th, get in touch with Linda now. We need to get you onto the schedule for phone calling so we can start phone calling, get all our members phone calling and putting the pressure on the sheriff and or the judge or whoever it is that we have to focus our attention to put the pressure upon. So, again, get a hold of Linda, anybody who's got a case in. Let us know if there is a hearing date coming up so we can get it into the system and get it out there. Again, also get a hold of Linda, anybody who's got a case, to find out date, time, and place of our meeting. It's a secret place, secret time, secret day. You know, we have to have little secret watches, you know. It's a secret time because we don't want people there that don't belong there. So anybody who is coming to that meeting is not to share this information with anybody else. This is just for you, for who has a case in the system, so that we can keep you updated. We can talk a little bit about the cases, generically speaking. Okay, I'd like to end off what everything I had to say here tonight with Isaiah chapter 14, verses 21. Well, it's in Isaiah 14 in a nutshell. Wisdom has seven pillars, and 2 Peter chapter 1 speaks about it also, and that is virtue, knowledge, temperance, patience, godliness, brotherly kindness, and charity. So we have to become virtuous people. We have to become a knowledgeable people. We have to have a good temperance, and we have to be patient. We have to be godly, and we have to have love for our brethren, and that's charity and brotherly kindness. We must have that. And by the way, our Bible studies is moving right into that discussion right here concerning these things as far as, you know, patience and godliness and brotherly kindness is concerned. So anybody interested in learning more about the King of the Court, Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, every Sunday, we have Bible studies. It's 1 hour right here in the Monday Night Room on Sundays. This past Sunday, we didn't have a Bible study this past Sunday, but we'll be picking up next Sunday. Okay, let's see. Gary, did you have something that you wanted to bring up before I pass it over to Gerard?
It was just, I'll wait till, I don't have anything to bring on, just something prior to Q&A.
Okay, do we have any other guest speakers tonight that want to share something, any of the chairman or anything of any of the groups, the committees?
I would like to defer to Jan.
Okay, well, I'm going to pass it to Gerard first, and then he can pick up on that and go from there. And please, everybody, read through our newsletter, because everything you need to know about NLA and what we're doing and we're afraid to ask, we tell you there right there in that newsletter. So please, you know, read that newsletter. We try to keep it as short as possible, but we try to pack it up with everything that we're doing, and it'll be building more and more, but we'll keep it as short as possible. We will be running some emails in between, like when we're begging for money. So we're going to start begging for money tomorrow, so please, we need money. But also, we're going to be sending out the alerts for the courtroom observers, which is everybody, all of our membership should be involved to make the phone calls and do the things. So we'll be blasting that out. It will be, this information will be inside our weekly letter. But we will pump out, I know the reminders probably on a Monday or Sunday night or a Monday morning, we'll pump out a reminder, hey, get out there, make these phone calls. Find the time to make the phone calls, and let's save America. We do it by getting justice in the court, wedging ourselves in, and starting to get some authority and respect. And at some point, before you know it, we're there and sitting in the courts and take control. Gerard, you got it.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing before we get going here with the queue. You know, we have some cases that have been coming in, and some of them are a little more high profile than others. And one of the other things that goes on is, and this is what lets me, one of the things that lets me know that we're having effect, because some of the federal prosecutors and the FBI guys that are in these cases, they threaten the defendants, and they say, if you do that, you get involved with the grand jury, you do that, we're going to send you to a bad prison, and we're going to do this. That tells me that they're worried. The fact that they have to threaten people that are going to jail and try to put more fear in them. And just remember, you know, when the devil attacks you and goes after you, it's because he knows that God has a plan for you. He knows that you were put in a position to accomplish something, to uphold something. And he's going to do whatever he can to break you from that. You know, so you're a soldier, and he attacks soldiers. People that are already doing the will of the devil, he leaves them alone. They're busy doing what they're doing, having a good old time. Why would he bother them, you know? He's going to go after those people that count the most. So just take heart and know that when these things come up and when they threaten you and they say all kinds of stuff, you got to know that they're grasping for straws. They're on their last legs and they're panicking, whether you believe it or not. So I just want to encourage everybody that's in that situation where law enforcement or these people that are supposed to be, you know, taking care of the protecting the weak against strong. That's one of the other things the government does for the people, is they protect the weak against the strong, so nobody gets taken advantage of. That means that you're having an effect, and they don't want you to. So just be encouraged by that. Don't be discouraged. And like John says, you know, not giving credibility to the fiction is also not fearing them, because by fearing them, you empower them. So they're going to go puff like smoke at some point. So I know that they're worried, because they wouldn't be threatening people if they weren't worried. They wouldn't have to. Okay, so that being said, I guess we'll open the queue up.
Gerard?
Yes.
We do have a guest speaker this evening. Can we put her in now before you start Q&A?
Okay, we'll do that right now. I can open the queue and she can get in there first, or we can find her and unmute her, however.
I've got her located. I'm just going to unmute her, which will make it a lot easier.
Yes, it will. So have at it.
She's now unmuted. Her name is Sammy Joe, and she's going to talk to us tonight about Common Core. And she's kind of new to this national Monday night call-in, so she'd like to go through the information she has. And then if there are questions when she finishes, if she can, she'll answer them. If not, she'll jot them down and get back to us next week on what people want to know, okay?
Okay, very good.
Okay, Sammy, you're unmuted. Please start whatever you'd like to say.
Well, I just want to say hi and ask how you gentlemen are tonight.
We're doing fine.
Very well.
Okay. Your show. I had a severe brain injury a year ago, so I had to write out what I wished to say, so bear with me while I read what I got here. I believe in being upfront with people, so I would like to clarify that I attend a non-501c3 Liberty Church. My spirituality is the goggles that I see things through. And my favorite Bible verse is, "Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty." A week ago, I knew little about Common Core, so to oversimplify part of it, there was the banking crisis in 2008. States were offered and accepted grant money. Common Core was part of the contract and is part of Agenda 21 and 30 and is in alignment with Obamacare. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation gave a ton of money to help get Common Core going. The data mining is done through affective measuring as opposed to effective measuring through facial recognition, pressure mouses, pressure reading seats to read how weight shifts, skin moisture sensors, etc. Functional MRIs seem to be in the future for the use of brain mapping emotions and thoughts. Testing is done by outside sources. Teachers do not have prior knowledge of what the tests include. So a student will go on the computer to do a test, and depending on how they answer questions, the latter questions change. So not each test is the same. Let's see. The anti-bullying agenda is in alignment with the transgenders and homosexuals being treated as if it's actually natural and normal. For example, in the second grade, if a teacher brings up homosexuality and a kid scrunches up their face and doesn't just accept it, then the parents are targeted for being haters and creating a bully. The tests that are administered do not measure what a kiddo knows, but rather how they respond, and it's basically a form of psychological testing. Each state has a database that mirrors the federal database, which all this information goes to, kind of like the NSA for each state. Parents are not privy to the information, but government agencies and family services are. It appears that when a child reaches the age of majority, the record follows them till they die, and even detentions become part of a permanent record. So schools are trained to tell parents that it's the law now, but the law does not indicate it is illegal to opt out. In 1933, we became the collateral on the national debt via birth certificates, and Common Core is a cookie-cutter program that dummies down the children and appears to be aimed at homing in on and creating sheeple children that can earn the state the most dollars. Common Core removes and usurps the responsibility of educating children from the parents and the states and hands it over to the oligarchy in D.C. It became clear as crystal to me that the state and local government officials are more focused on dollar signs than listening to we the people and are helping the oligarchy take away our voices. Keep in mind that Article 6 tells us that the United States Constitution is the supreme law of the land and that it had been ruled in Murdoch versus Pennsylvania that a state cannot take a right and convert it into a privilege. At this point, I would like to encourage everyone to take the civics class so we can all have the same information and better work as a team. Then we can more effectively achieve our goals with our rogue government as well as in our personal lives. I would also like to encourage people to find a liberty-loving, non-501c3 church, such as the one that I go to here in Kalispell, so you can begin to disconnect from the mainstream brainwashing we are all being subjected to. And that's all I got for now.
Thank you very much. That was very succinct. Yeah.
And I would like to just make a short comment, if I may.
Okay.
You know, one of the things we do intend on doing, and it's obvious because Common Core, just like Agenda 21, is repugnant to the Constitution. And so, therefore, it must be shut down and done away with. And so once we get into the courts, Common Core and Agenda 21, literally overnight, will cease to exist. But we need to educate the people so that they understand what's going on as things go on. And I'd like to just read a verse here because I was listening to what Gerard was saying and also what you had brought up, but particularly the fear for those who fear. The Lord says here in Isaiah chapter 35, verse 4, "Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even a God with recompense. He will come and save you. And that's the promise of the Lord, you know. And look what happened when Israel came out of Egypt and they were stuck between a rock and a hard place. They had the sea on one side and they had the Egyptian army on the other side, and they were done. It was over. And yet God waited till the last moment and saved them. He always does that, every single time. So today is no difference. Wait on him. He, you know, if we have a fearful heart, just rest in him. Be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come. That's all I got. Thank you.
Yes.
And when you were reading out of Exodus, I think it's in Ezekiel 37, but I could be wrong on the address, we're basically guided to ask God to protect us from the wrongdoings of those that were before us. And quite often, I think a lot of the problems that we have in this country is because of Roe versus Wade. I could be totally off the mark on that, but that's my feeling on it.
Well, there's million souls?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, the individual, I forget which one, Roe or Wade, I forget which one, but in any event, the individual that really pushed that case forward had repented and changed, I heard, their position in that case. So even the person who was fighting that case went up against abortion. But anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to you, Gerard. Thank you.
Okay.
You turn your mic on.
Yeah, I did. I just did. Yeah, thank you. Thank
anytime,
you, Brad.
Anytime.
All right, I lost my train of thought, so I'm going to go. I'm going to move ahead.
Well, get off the train and get on another one.
Well, it's not coming for a while, so I don't want to waste time. I'm going to go ahead and open the queue up for questions and answers. So anybody, especially people, get in there first who have never been in there or who we missed last week. And we'll start out with that. Okay. We have nobody in the queue. I don't believe that.
Oh, they're coming.
Yeah, I know. I'm just... Okay.
Well, you know what we should do is call people into the queue that missed last time. Didn't we have a lot of people left over in the queue last time?
Well, that's what I said. I said anybody who missed last time should get in first.
Oh, okay. Right.
Okay, so now anybody, I'm assuming that those are those people that came in first. So everybody else can come in. So
you'll rue the day when you ask for more.
Yeah. Well, you know, we never have too little, do we? Anyway, we're going to go and open the question. This is... Cheryl, it says, from Tennessee.
Unmuted. Yes, sir. I just wanted to say, Mr. Rash, you were mentioned about the sheriff. And Memphis, Tennessee, in Shelby County, Sheriff Bill Oldham is evicting people from their homes. What you may not know, the election held from years ago, which he was selected. I don't call it an election, but he was selected for the position. There was controversy surrounding his selection. He was all Democrats lost except one, and the Democratic Party filed a lawsuit regarding that election, which included the election of Shelby County Sheriff Bill Oldham. So my question is, are you going to still try to educate him? Because he is evicting people from their homes. He's part of the corruption of the mortgage foreclosure, and with that I yield.
Yeah, we will accept anyone with a repentant heart. It doesn't matter. Now, look at, you know, once you if someone comes to reality and to terms with the truth and starts to realize that they're on the wrong side, we should give them all opportunity. And we'll always have the olive branch out there for anyone. Now, even though we, the people, may forgive them as they work with us to restore what is right, that doesn't mean that they're not going to pay for their sins, so to speak, in the sense that people who they have hurt or injured in the past, okay, that if they bring a case up against these people, then justice is going to be met. But at least, you know, the grand jury will do an indictment, most likely, of course. You know, someone has a complaint and it has to be dealt with. The grand jury will do an indictment. But the Unified United States Grand Jury will plead to the jury, the grand jury doing that indictment, to pass the message on to the jury the trial jury to consider mercy in the end, if they find this sheriff guilty. Consider mercy concerning jail time. Of course, you know, look at, he's got a, if he stole an ox, he's got to replace it with three or four, whatever it is that's required, you know. And jail time may be a requirement, but, you know, we'll on their behalf ask for that mercy. After all, they changed their ways, and they might have been the pivoting point on the saving of America by them realizing and changing their ways and putting their full force and heart to the right place. So, and remember, if we're not a merciful people, we ourselves will not be get mercy. If we are not a merciful people, we're not godly. And if we're not godly, surely godly will not come to protect us. You know, as we had read early, fear not, because God is a vengeful God, and he's going to come, and he's going to save you. But he will not save us if we ourselves are not godly. If we don't have the attributes of God, if we don't put forth the virtues, you know, and we don't come with that sense of honor, that sense of justice, and that sense of mercy, if we don't come with that, then we too will be cursed and be well deserving of that curse. And for us it would be worse, because we already know what is true and right. So we can't do the wrong.
Yeah, I want to add to that. She asked, are we going to educate him? Well, the advantage to educating a bad sheriff is the fact that he gets our stuff, and maybe he even responds to it. But you see, we're creating a record. So the more we educate him and the more stuff we do in his county that he rails against, he's building a record against himself. And he has. And when the time comes for him to be indicted, he can't turn around and say he didn't know or anything else, because we're going to give him plenty of opportunities to break the law or to uphold it. So that's the advantage to that. And when we go in, and I don't care who the sheriff is or where he is, when the grand jury makes him aware that there's a crime and that we've done an indictment, you know, whether he accepts us as a grand jury or not, we're still making him aware of a crime. He has an oath, and he has a duty to prosecute that crime. He gets a sworn affidavit. That's the basis of law. He needs to pursue that. There needs to be an arrest. There needs to be a court date. And when he doesn't do that, he gets added into the case. So we'll move to his undersheriff, and then we'll go other places. I don't want to get into all the different strategies, but they are there, and there are other people there. And we don't have all our eggs in his basket. Make no mistake about it. You know, the sheriff is the top dog, but guess what? There's other people that will do the job. If the sheriff drops dead tomorrow, believe me, somebody will take his place. So, you know, you go to the undersheriff. And the other thing I wanted to bring up without getting too long-winded is what we talked about, Common Core and all these different things they're doing in our town. You know, they're doing that at a local level. We have people here who have or have the ability to be on school boards and be on town boards. When this Common Core and all this stuff comes up, that's where you have control over it, and that's where you can educate the people who hold the authority to keep this stuff out of the schools. Like Cheryl said there, or not Cheryl, before her, the woman before her that talked on this Common Core stuff, there's no law says you have to participate. As a matter of fact, I believe that this comes from a foreign corporation, and that it's actually subversion and treason for these people to contract and accept this money because it comes out of the UN and a foreign entity, so they have no right to the local town has no right contracting with some un-American entity. Anyway, I'm going to go move to the next question, all that being said, and that looks like Indiana. Christopher, you've been unmuted.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Well, I had a comment. You guys are talking about the Constitution and stuff. U.S. Code, it's funny because there's a very interesting section. If you look up the U.S. Code, section 3002, it says it in plain English, not even dancing it around anything here, like, you know, indirect English or anything. It says it. excuse me, Title 28, Section 3002, Subsection 15, you go to it, there's all these legal definitions of all these interesting terms, and 15 it says, United States, quote unquote, means a federal corporation, and it actually describes what the United States government defines as a person as well. I think this should be noted on the National Liberty Alliance main page, because a lot of people don't know what these definitions are truly defined as by the United States government. And number 10, subsection 10, says a quote-unquote person includes a natural person, in parentheses, including an individual person, comma, a corporation, comma, a partnership, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this is really what the United States government thinks of citizens, because, you know, we're all corporations. That's why when we die, we're a corpse. You know,
well,
all
that,
these
that
words...
Is... Go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, John. That's really all I had to say.
Yeah, you know, that is the corporate charter that you're looking into. You know, this discovered itself first, I believe, in U.S. 26. I also found it in U.S. 28. Was yours in U.S. 28 also, the one you just read? You were looking at 3,000?
Yeah, something? U.S. 28, 3,000, yes.
Right, yeah, because we
3,000,
were looking at
3,002. 3,002.
Yeah, we were looking at that recently, but I had found it in U.S. 26 years and years ago. And when I started to realize the fraud, when I went to battle, my first battle with the IRS, which was back to 1999, 2000, and then I got a hold of U.S. Title 26 and
well, it's Title 28. It's
searches.
It's,
yeah, I understand that, but I found it in
28.
Yeah, but I had found it first in 26. It had been in there for a long time. We just recently saw it in 28. So, yeah, it's there, too. So they put it in a few places. But, yeah, what they have done is they've turned the whole system into corporations. You know, government is a trust, and the government, the legislature had been given the trust and the authority to do certain things and to create agencies. So we have government agencies. That's their power and authority, to create agencies within the criteria of Article 1 of the Constitution. And whenever they step outside of that, then, of course, it's repugnant, and that's clear in many ways, just by trying to harmonize the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and common law, basically in itself. When you harmonize it all, it becomes, certain things become repugnant. And, of course, Marbury versus Madison, which was 1802 or 1803, made it clear concerning repugnancy in the Constitution. If it's repugnant, it's not law. It's as if it never was. But, you know, in order for them to really bring us to America down, they had to move us into corporatism. And in order to get us into corporatism, they had to incorporate every part of government. So they've incorporated the United States of America. They've incorporated every state. They've incorporated every county. There may be a few exceptions to the rule, I've heard, but they're very far and in between. They've incorporated the cities, they've incorporated the towns and the villages. And so now once you have corporations, now they have the power and the authority to do, to create the charter, and to create, which is really basically their codes and statutes. So every town and village, they have their codes, they have their statutes. They're all unconstitutional. They can't be applied towards the living man, if I might use that word here. They can't be applied to us. But they do, and they try to, and we have to resist that. But everything is prepared. America is primed in many ways. America has been severely demoralized. That was a requirement in order to bring America down. We also have to be de-educated. That's also. But we've also had to become familiar with, things like, checking your papers, going through, searches and all those things. And they're really working in the schools with that. They teach the children that, coming right out of school. So they're weaned into thinking this is all okay. They do it at the airports and so on. And of course, they had to set the corporations up. So we are primed for the takeover, ready for the pull the plug. But by God's mercy, they haven't been able to do that yet. For numerous reasons, but National Liberty Alliance, in my opinion, is along with a lot of the other liberty groups out there, are part of those reasons. But corporatism, in order to move to corporatism, which is the next step to Nazism or communism, whichever way it goes, it doesn't matter, because the end result brings us right to where they want to, and that brings us into slavery. But in order to do that, the first step is corporations, to incorporate. You know, before you destroy a nation and bring them into corporatism, you first bring them into a democracy. And so that's what they've done in America. They've changed us from a republic to a democracy only by just talking about it. You say the lie 26 times and people believe it. I mean, I've even heard, I read in a speech recently that John F. Kennedy gave, and he even made the error of calling us a democracy. And I've heard a lot of good people who understand certain things and truths, but and yet they didn't understand to call us a democracy. Our founding fathers would be turning over their graves hearing that word democracy. They despised democracy. They understood that democracy was just the beginning of really totalitarianism. Democracy is the first thing, demoralizing, de-educating, and then, of course, corporatism. And then you've got all the controls, all the laws, everything in place, and we self-police ourselves, and then we go into slavery. And that's where we're at, and we need to prevent that.
Democracy is nothing but two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner.
Correct. Yes, that was Thomas Jefferson, I think, or it could have been Benjamin Franklin. So, but yes. And, you know, we have democratic, we choose some of our elected individuals democratically, but not all of them. The president really isn't selected democratically. The states ultimately really vote him in. And the same thing with the Senate, although with the 17th Amendment, it destroyed that. We need to bring this back because they had no power or authority to change the body of the Constitution. Our founding fathers negotiated this power of the Senate. It was extremely important that there be two houses, one controlled by the legislators or the state legislators so that they have a pull and authority and a say, and the other one controlled by the people, our own elected individuals within our own election districts. And there is the power play, you know, between government and the people to have that pull back and forth. Okay, the committee man process was a way to control the process and the whole system, but again, they've taken that over and made it a top-down organization when it should be a bottom-up, power of the people, the power on the grassroots level, and then, of course, the juries, the grand jury and the trial jury, and that's where the real power is. We win that back, we'll take back the committee man literally overnight, and we'll bring this whole process back, and we'll start ripping apart these unconstitutional bills that they have put together, particularly, anything after the 10th Amendment is subject and a problem, is suspect and a problem.
Well, that's right, and the last thing I had to say is I truly believe that George Washington had got on his shoulder during the Revolutionary War. I mean, what else could explain the things that he did and the beautiful things and how much bravery he had? How did he live through all? Can I ask you, John Durash, where is the movie about George Washington? They don't want us to see it, right?
Well, yeah, I'm sure. Look, they don't want the real George Washington to be known. They don't want the real Thomas Jefferson to be known. You know, I have heard forever, okay, they say that, Jefferson was against himself because he was against slavery and he was doing all these things and yet he had his own slaves. And I just scratched my head and I thought to myself, they must have then had the opportunity, you know, Jefferson might have voiced a few opinions here or there which really put out his heart concerning this thing, and they must have just erased it out of history. But recently, you know, some months back, I started reading the book, The Real Thomas Jefferson, which is Thomas Jefferson in his own words. Isn't that the real Thomas Jefferson? His own quotes, to understand him by his writings and his speeches or anything that he had to say or do? Well, it turns out he had fought from day one. His first post as a legislature, I think, was in 1775. Okay, and he also was recalled 76 and 78 and down in Virginia, and he also became the governor, and he also eventually became the president of the United States. But in any event, when you read his words and you read his works, he was struggling to get rid of the slavery. And the reason why he couldn't release his slaves, and here's the big secret, and why did they hold us back? It's in his history. Well, how come they've kept us so dumb to this? The reason why Thomas
it was illegal. It was illegal.
Exactly.
It was illegal, right?
It was illegal for him to emancipate a slave. So in order to get rid of his slaves, he'd have to sell them to someone else, and he refused to do that. And that's why Thomas Jefferson kept his slaves. But they were as good as freemen. When you read his books, you read his writings, you read what his daughter had to say about him, and even the slaves themselves and many people, they loved this man. As a matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson said himself one of his first really comforting and loving memories in his very young childhood as a baby being held in the hands of a slave. And that was like one of his first young, strong memories that he held through life. And that's the kind of relationship he had with people, the people that worked in his plantation or whatever you want to call it, his land. And he then, of course, had those slaves to inheritance. So,
same thing with George Washington, and he actually freed all of his slaves. And he, one last thing, people have to realize when George Washington was president, he did not live in a White House or anything like that. He lived in downtown Philadelphia, which is basically like an outdoor museum nowadays. He lived in basically a middle-class home in downtown Philadelphia, and people can look up paintings of this where people are just like, the commoners are just walking on the sidewalk, and if you wanted to, you can just look right into the first floor window, and you can see Martha Washington and George Washington just sipping their coffee if they wanted to. Like,
well,
that's how down-to-earth they were.
That was the same thing with Abraham Lincoln and even Jackson. You know, Jackson was walking down the street when an attempted assassination took place, and it was really amazing with Jackson because the guy pulled out a gun to shoot him, and it misfired, so it didn't go off, and he had the second gun, and that misfired, too. And I don't remember the story particularly, but if I recall, he beat him, you know, the guy. But I don't know. In any event, that's kind of an amazing story. It wasn't time for Jackson to go. After all, he's the guy that killed the Banks.
Oh, that was his last words on his deathbed, I know. And what about Alexander Hamilton, who's on our $10 bill, who got killed by Aaron Burr in a duel?
Right. Yeah, Alexander Hamilton is an interesting individual because, you see, he played the role and served the enemy. But I don't think he realized it. I think he was a useful idiot,
yeah.
Even though he was an educated man. He had a lot to do with the Constitution. He had a lot. He had a lot of good things to say and a lot of good things to do. But he was led astray and lost because he was heavily influenced by bankers. And I think that's because bankers were his mentors in some way, maybe through family or something. But he was heavily influenced by the bankers. But he didn't understand. I believe he really didn't understand. Now, Burr, when he killed him, he hated him. Jefferson wasn't too happy with him either. As a matter of fact, he talked to Washington about him being a traitor and that you got to watch this guy and so on and so forth. But Jefferson was a black and white guy, you know, either one or the other. There is no sitting on a wall with him because he'll knock you off. You're going to go one way or the other. And his concern with Hamilton is Jefferson understood clearly the dangers of the bank, and he warned us over and over. And then yet here was Hamilton sticking up for the banks and trying to get the banks going. That's why Jefferson saw him as a serious danger to liberty and the republic.
I just think it's funny you put that at a parallel modern day society. That'd be like Joe Biden going to a duel with like a Jack Lew, Janet Yellen.
Hey, well, anyway,
okay.
It's interesting, you know.
Okay, we're going to move on next one. We got a lot of people in the queue. Thank you for that, Christopher. Okay, next question. It didn't move. I'm going to hit it.
Hey, it's Todd.
Oh, I think I screwed up. I got Illinois' Gary. I think I
no,
double-pumped
him. No, he's good.
That.
He's good.
Is he?
I think he's still there. Yeah. 828. You there?
Hello?
3399. Go right ahead. What's your first name?
Hello, sir. I was asked to speak to John.
Yeah, what's your first name and state?
My first name is Andrew Millington. My last name is Millington. I'm in North Carolina, Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Okay.
Okay, Andrew. Go ahead.
I was asked to get a hold of you by Nikki. I got an email about 2 days ago. She's been tracking. She helped us get our case for the hippocorpus. And she's been trying to track it, but she said there's no evidence of it even being up there.
Well, if you didn't go back to redo, which we started some months ago, a new intake form, you know, look at plain language, exactly what happened. We've been infiltrated by the enemy, whether they were useful idiots or they actually were the enemy, that's up in the air. But they infiltrated us in places that were vital, and that was one of the places that they infiltrated us, and they destroyed all of the intake. So everything we had coming in really was gibberish. We didn't have any of the information we really needed. They didn't do the job, or they destroyed the paperwork, or whatever they did, so we never got it, and we never were able to do the habeas corpuses. And it caused a lot of problems. But we, since then, have been able to repair it, and we've got good people in. We've got people who are educated and have the ability to really work the paperwork. And it's just a handful of people, only a couple of people, really. But nevertheless, we are taken. We've got 105. And if you want to check to see where you are at, okay, go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and you go out there and you highlight directory. On the blue bar, it's the third from the right. Highlight directory, and you come down and click on track habeas corpus petition. Now, when that page opens up, just scroll down a little bit, and you could put this in alphabetical order by clicking on the word petitioner's case right on the top, and then you can scroll down. What's your last name?
Millington. Every time we try to proceed. See, we're in North Carolina. I'm going to be honest with you. Every time we try to proceed, that's why we had Nikki do it. She's in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
She's one of your cake workers.
Your name is not in here, so we don't have any paperwork on you. But what I would tell you to do is this, okay? This is what you need to do. Go in on the right-hand side. You'll see the upside-down happy face, which is a frowny face. And he's holding up the help sign. Click on that. Click on the proper type of case you have and follow the steps, okay? And you'll get three things, really. We need a good affidavit. If you've already done that, then you send us that. Take your information that you've already collected together and then fill out the intake form. If you've got all the information, you can fill the intake form probably in 15, 20 minutes. If your affidavit is ready to rock and roll, those are the two things you need. You can then submit it. We'd like to see if you can get the docket, but some people can't get the docket, but we proceed without the docket.
Nikki did it on her computer because here in North Carolina, every time we try to do it on any computer and our names come up, soon as our names come across any computer, I can't even work a job on the books because the judge that was overseeing the case.
Uh-huh.
Because I get penalized.
Okay,
let me tell you
what you do. You get whatever paperwork you have. You get a hold of Linda. I'm going to give everyone Linda's phone number, okay, if you want to talk with Linda. Now remember, Linda is a very busy person, so please do not call Linda to go through all different things. Follow the process, fill out the intake form. Once you get the intake form filled out and you get your affidavit filled out and you've sent it up, Linda will get in touch with you. But get a hold of Linda. I'm going to give you the phone number to find out when our next meeting is for people who have put in habeas corpuses. And as long as she's got your paperwork starting the process, she'll give you the information. And her phone number is 509.
509. Okay.
592.
592. Okay.
4553.
4553. Well, she emailed my wife and told my wife to set up a Skype account, but I didn't know you had to pay for it.
Well, no, you don't have to pay for Skype account. They try to get you to take the paid version, okay, but just ignore that and go for the free one, that's all. You know, they do give you a little sucker punch there, But just bypass that. Just continue on, download it, and fill out the paperwork, and you'll be getting the free version. And then get her onto your list. The best way to get in touch with any of us, whether it's me, whether it's Gerard, Gary, Linda, Jan, anybody, okay, is through Skype. So everybody, that's a tool. It's a tool that it's an important tool that we use because we're able to communicate. We have meetings on Skype. We can get up to 20 or 25 people into a Skype room. We can pass files back and forth, mega files, huge files. We can pass them back and forth.
Okay.
So it's a real good communication tool. It's completely free. But they do have a paid service where you can get a phone number, for instance. This number is a Skype phone number that I just gave you of Linda. So she uses her Skype as a phone. She can make phone calls out. She can receive phone calls in through Skype. But, you know, get her on Skype if you can get her on Skype. And if not, get her on the phone and tell her, you know, that you're putting the paperwork through and that you spoke to me on. She's listening right now, so she knows who you are when you call. And she'll give you the information on how to find us on our next meeting, when our meetings are, and share that with no one, because only people who have paperwork in the system are invited to that meeting. It's purely for them, to support them, to help them, to answer their questions, to give them some information, to give them hope and surety and whatever else we can do to help each other. Okay?
Well, we're just trying to get this resolved because I'm tired of looking over my shoulder. My wife's the same way.
Yeah, I understand. Get your paperwork together, get an intake, and give a call to Linda. And you'll be plugged in at that point, and keep up on the Monday night meetings, and get yourself educated, take our course, civics course. We'll be having, hopefully, Lord willing, soon, a constitutional course, and we'll have that up there soon. And then, of course, we're writing a book for administrators if you were planning to become an administrator.
Okay. I'm trying to put exactly what's going on because Linda emailed my wife, told her to set up a Skype account to track it, and Nikki emails us every night, and I'm just trying to figure out if she didn't receive it, why'd she have us try to set up a Skype account?
I don't know, so you'll have to discuss that with her. I don't see it up, but maybe once intake starts, then you post it up there. When intake is completed, you know, read the intake page. You know, I sent you through the page, which is called, let me look at it one more time, committees. Is it under committees or under directory? Go to directory and click on track habeas corpus petition, okay? And read that page. Understand how to track your case. It'll give you all the information on how to follow through and how to track the case, okay?
How would you do it on a library computer? Because I'm sure that's pretty secure.
Yeah, same thing. You'll have to sign in. Remember, you have to log in. You have to be a member, so you can go to that computer and log in. I would suggest, you know, I do know sometimes people are going through real hard times, and even to get $200 up is difficult. But, you know, for $200-$300, you can get a laptop at tiger.com. I think it's just tiger.com, if I recall. Hang on a minute. I'll tell you in a minute.
Yeah, that's right. Tiger.
Tiger. Tiger Direct.
Yeah, tigerdirect.com. Now, if you go there, you will find a reasonable price. Sometimes you'll get them as low as $300 for a nice laptop. I had bought my daughter one for $300, and boy, it was a really good laptop, and she used it for many years. It was under $300, as a matter of fact. But if you get yourself your own laptop, even if you don't have a connection to the internet, you'll find hotspots. You know, I know down the road from where I live, right down the road, there's a Dunkin' Donuts, and that's a hotspot. You can go sit down in Dunkin' Donuts again. They sit.
We got a lot of.
Yeah, and you
we went from having a lot of money to me working 12-hour shifts, pulling in $6,000 a week, to having nothing. DSS made it so rough around here. We don't even know where to go.
Yeah, I know. They're horrible. They're evil people. But anyway, get your paperwork in. See if you can't muster up $200-$300 to get yourself a laptop. And then at least, you know, you don't have to necessarily go all the way to the library, or, you know, you can go places. There's a guy that I see all the time. There's a restaurant not far from me. In that parking lot, if you pull into that parking lot, there's three or four accesses to computer, you know, to the internet,
okay.
to hotspots.
Yeah, but hey,
so
John.
So you could find hotspots all over.
Hey, John.
Yes.
John.
Yes.
For your information, that's a crime.
Oh, well, look at if they don't. If they don't close it up, people use it. But I don't know. Why would it be a crime?
Because that is for paying customers. In just about every state that I'm aware of, there's a couple states I know I'm in question with, but most of the states in this country, they can be arrested.
All right, well, look at if you hack your way in, okay. If you got
John.
I just want to make a point that I think and what I think. For instance, if you come here to where I live and you go down to Dunkin' Donuts, you don't need a code to get in. You go right in the door. It's an open hotspot. And there's numerous places like that. So if you pull into a place where there's a restaurant and they got it open, they know they should have closed the door.
That's a public hotspot. McDonald's are public hotspots. They're known. Many of the hotels have public hotspots. The ones that don't.
That's why this guy's got three or four of them. We got two or three hotels very close right there with the restaurant. There's four hotspots right there.
Look, at the hotels that don't want you to use their sites, they give
they
you
put
a code.
They
put a code. You put it in. Look, let me just address this real quick. I was a town councilman, and we had computers with no security. I had 7 FBI agents come in doing an investigation on a building inspector we had because he had been doing some stuff in the city, him and his boss, and they thought he was doing it up here. And when they went into our computer, they said, your computers are wide open. And I mean, this is the town. And they said, anybody that comes in, they said, you don't even have a warning that says you're entering a municipal site. They said, there wouldn't be a thing we could do because it's like somebody trespassing on your property when you don't have a no trespassing sign. You can't hold them to it. Like, if you're gonna get somebody for trespassing, they have to know when they've entered your property. So if you have an open thing, you could... You wouldn't even know it necessarily. So if there's no warning that says it's this or is that, I mean, technically, you're right, Gary. If they wanted to push the issue, they could say, well, you're using something that's not yours and blah, blah, blah. But it's so easy to get out of that because they didn't have any warning at all. They're just asking for trouble. Look, I can walk in your house, Gary. If you leave the door open, guess what? They can't get me for breaking. It's breaking and entering. So I can walk in. I left the door open for a tenant to look at the apartment, and they moved in, and the cop said, I can't even get them for breaking in. He said,
and I'm sure you can count on an honest shake from the court.
Yes. So I just,
Hey, just real quick.
Hey,
anybody trying to get into the queue, *6? Anybody, because I see Jeff is trying to get in. Jeff, *6 to get into the queue, then push 1. And if you get in now, it's not that long a line at the moment. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Anyway, I just wanted to say that was my experience, you know, coming from the FBI. They said, look, if you don't have a warning, pretty hard to prosecute. So, and that was a municipality. So anyway, I'm not going to admit to ever using a hotspot I didn't have permission for. How's that?
All right, we'll check that out.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was that Jan? Yeah.
Something happened in the Quay and Illinois. Gary got jumped over. I see him. Do you want me to unmute him so he can have his day in court?
Okay, I just unmuted Crystal because I jumped the gun. But you're right. I did. I thought I jumped over somebody. So
let me know when you're done with Crystal.
So we'll put him up next. Go ahead, Connecticut Crystal. You've been unmuted. Hello, 1111. You've been unmuted. Well, I guess they're muted and they don't know how to unmute.
NLA to Connecticut. NLA to Connecticut.
Connecticut. Connecticut.
Connecticut Crystal, 203.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jan. Unmute. Who'd you say it was? Gary, was it?
Yes, Illinois, Gary.
Yeah, just leave her sit. Maybe
we'll leave her open if she comes in. So, Illinois, go ahead.
He's unmuted.
Yeah, this isn't Illinois, Gary. This is Patrick, Northern New York.
Oh, okay. It says Illinois, Gary on your sign. Interesting.
He's incognito.
Yeah, totally.
He's using an illegal hotspot to get here. No, I'm going to
Well, Darren.
Right, but seriously, we're talking about common law here. No victim, no crime.
Yeah, right. I like that.
That's right.
All right, so I just don't – I haven't been updated or heard anything about what happened with Maud Pollock, case one.
Yeah, what happened is her case was put off till the 9th. It was very interesting because the judge claimed, okay, when asked did they get the paperwork and read it, she says, oh, I don't read things sent to me, or something like that. I mean, it was the most ridiculous thing. I mean, a judge saying they don't read papers, you know, and especially something from the grand jury, she doesn't read it. That meant she read it. That means she's shaking in her boots, and she should be. And if she's listening in, continue to shake in your boots or let these people go.
What kind of a turnout?
She's put off to the 9th or the 8th. I forget which date. We'll be following up on it. And we're taking a new direction with her case because, really, she's never had due process at all. Okay. And even though that case did do a non-judicial foreclosure, she made the challenge, but the judge did a summary judgment and ruled against her anyway. And what they like to do is just take a long time and cleanse the case. And that's what they did. They took years to go through to cleanse the case so they finally make the move and push it over through summary judgment and feel that he's safe. And if he's listening in, let me know. Let me let you know that you're not safe because we're going to get you unless you repent and change. But in any event,
How many people actually showed up?
The thing is that they robbed the property, and we're now going to deal with it as a crime that needs to be indicted. But the sheriff, he needs to go and make an arrest. So that's where we're going to head for that one.
Right. So do you know how many people actually showed up, or did anybody?
I think she said three or four. I think it was four people that came to help at her aid. And she did get someone that was very good, that had some problems, and she understood the system. She knew the judge, and she was there with her and assisted, gave her moral support and assisted with that moral support. And so things kind of went well, not as good as we would like, but we're not done yet. We're not done with that at all, you know?
Right. They're just, a lot of the times, they're just hoping to exhaust and hoping that if they wait it out, people will just go away.
Right. Well, we may actually, if we have to, you know, we're going to get the sheriff on the phone soon after we get this next set of paperwork created so that everybody understands how this crime works, and so we can explain it to the sheriff. But if we have to, we'll go down to Long Island. It's only about a 5 or 6 hour trip for us, but we'll go out there all the way out at the end of Long Island there, and we'll personally sit down with the sheriff and explain it to him if that's what it's going to take.
Right. I sent Carl a bunch of forms I've been gathering and stuff, and then he posted them they were up for a little while yesterday, and then they were taken down. I don't know if that's something that.
Yeah, yeah, I took that down. What was your man on the land or something, or what's your code name? What is
the email is I am the living man.
I am the living man. Yeah, look at all that stuff in there has some purpose, but not for anything we do. I'm glad you brought this up. You see, because we are very careful in the courts, so we're not going to go and try to get judicial review because they'll never get it. We'll give them judicial review. We're not going to go file forms and beg into them. We don't participate with that. We're the grand jury. We're coming in. We see the crime. We reveal the crime, and we expect people to respond and do the constitutional, the right thing, the just thing. And that's where we're going to go with this. We're not going to beg anyone. We're not going to ask anyone to fill out forms to beg them, because at that point you're going into their sandbox. And if you fight for standing, that's what you're doing is fighting for standing. And believe me, I just want to say this for others. Maybe you understand this, but look at, we too went through the school of hard knocks trying to figure this stuff out. And we too went to the man on the land and filed papers and declared who we are, filed it with the county and did all those things. And we talked about being free. We didn't go get rid of our licenses and things like that, but we considered that. And but nevertheless, as we were going through that process and we started to learn other things, we started to understand we're giving them power, we're giving them authority, we're giving the fiction reality by acknowledging them. So our process and our focus is no. We're not begging you for anything. We're not asking you for anything. We're telling you what you need to do because we are the people. And we have an unalienable right to justice. And, you know, I was talking with someone recently, and I forget, in a conversation where the point came up that in order to get into the federal courts, it might have been Gerard, that you needed to have 30 grand or something to put up for a particular a lawyer just to get into these federal courts to deal with a constitutional issue. You know, right off the bat, they want 30 grand. Well, wait a second. And then you go into court without them, and they try to tell you you can't represent yourself. You got to go get a lawyer, or you're crazy because you can't do it, or you're incompetent, and so on and so forth. Or you can't bring someone as a next friend to help you. All this stuff, when the fact of the matter is we have free justice. Justice is an unalienable right. It shouldn't cost us a penny to walk into that court and file a paper. And all we have to do in a common law court, we don't even need to know the process. We don't need to know the forms. We don't need to know anything. All we need is to walk into that court with an affidavit and file that right there with the clerk. And they'll have to give us the paperwork. We'll sit down and fill it out. Okay, but not paperwork telling me I got to give them money, because once they get the money, that's extortion, and they can't do that. And don't tell me I need a lawyer. I got an affidavit, and an affidavit stands as truth and rules the court until it's rebutted by another affidavit. And if people aren't willing to swear in opposition to what you have sworn, then apparently they're liars, and they're the ones that fear doing anything or saying anything because they're lying, and they're going to go to jail. So righteousness and justice will win in a court of law. And if someone goes in and lies and you have a contradictive, if one person has one thing in an affidavit and the other one rebuts it in another thing, well, it's all a matter of just sitting and listening. That's all you got to do. And anybody that's a cop understands this. Just let them talk, because they're going to hang themselves. There's no way you can maintain consistency in that kind of a situation. You will make an error, and they will catch you. And then they will know who's telling the truth and who's telling the lie. It's the nature of the way things are. Some people call it the Freudian slip. And so that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. So
that's all I have to say anyway.
Right. So the reason why I'm thinking, you know, I'm for, you know, notifying these different, you know, quote, investigative agencies, these other agencies that are supposed to oversee and investigate misconduct and abuse.
Right.
Is because it's kind of a similar fashion of notifying the sheriff and saying, hey, this is what needs to be done. We're reporting what's going on. We're informing you of the crimes that are being committed. And I think it's more so educational.
I do appreciate that. And it's not that people shouldn't use those things, but we don't want our people to use those things, because we want them to stay focused. We want people to get on the phone calls and do the phone call things and put the pressure and come with authority. Let them know, hey, look it, I'm one of the people.
Okay.
I'm with the Unified New York State Common Law Grand Jury, and we here at the Unified New York State Common Law Grand Jury is unified with the other 49 states, and therefore we're coming to you as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And someone else from Florida will call up and say this thing, I'm from Florida, I'm from California,
right.
I'm from Texas. You see, they need to understand we are the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury with presence in every state of the Union, and we have had it, and we're going to bring justice back. Extraordinary,
right.
Situations or times calls for extraordinary responses, and we have to do things extraordinary. And
so for courtroom observers, do we have a blank witness form that people can fill out for NLA, for the common law grand jury, that they can actually put their thoughts to paper and remember it, you know, and actually make a witness statement rather than just showing up?
Well, yeah, we have, I'm not sure what night. Nathan, I know you're here. Can you tell us what day and time is the – no, that's the response committee. Carl, if you're here. I think Carl is here, or maybe Jan may know this, or Gary may know this. What time is the meeting for the courtroom observers? Is that on a Thursday, and is it at 9 p.m., and what room is it in? Can anyone answer that question?
It's on Wednesday at 9 p.m., and it's
is it in the Monday room?
Yes, it is, with the Monday code.
Okay, so Wednesday, I'm going to put that up on the site too. Wednesday, 9 p.m. in the Monday room, okay,
yep.
Right here, this room. And that's where you'll go, and you'll get a lot of information, and you get to, what was the question, or what were you saying?
Well, affidavit. We always tell people, when you get courtroom observers, make sure that they know they should have a pen and paper, and as soon as that court's over, they should do an affidavit of what they saw and what they heard, because that's very powerful. You know, the person,
right, and then they get that affidavit to the victim.
Right. They should give copies of that to the victim, because that all goes for the record. And that's
right.
What makes the judges nervous. You got a bunch of people with legal pads and a pen sitting there writing, oh, my goodness. And, you know, you get two people, they get nervous. But if, God forbid, you ever got 20 people, they think that there's a revolution going on or something. But that's very powerful.
They got it.
There is, right.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to make sure that we make a move towards, or that we can work on, if we're not going to fill out different forms for, you know, notifying the other investigative agencies that are already in place, if we're just going to focus on being witnesses and doing the common law grand jury.
Right.
The
common law grand jury comes under their own authority, and it's the highest authority in the land. It is the tribunal. The judges have nothing on us. No other judiciary review board is higher than this judiciary review board. The procedure and processes of the court is made around the jury. We are written up inside the Bill of Rights.
Those people that showed up for Maude Pollock's case, was it all for show, or are they going to fill out witness forms?
They should know. They've been told. They've been informed.
Okay.
And this should be brought up in meetings, and people should be talking about it. And we do have a form, which really is just gives the header and the conclusion, and you just put your story in between. We want people to be just people. We don't want people to be lawyers in the sense of trying to write some legalese or legal papers or quote anything. All we want is just the facts. You know, it's
right.
Like drag, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts.
And
that's all we want.
And what's powerful in that is because they like to change the transcript and the record. So if you got three people writing an affidavit and their thing doesn't jive with that, it makes it much harder for them to change. They love to change that transcript. And if they see people there writing, and then you're submitting affidavits from other people, that takes the wind. That right there reveals the crime. And I just want to say, if you have a case yourself and some judge abuses you and you want to report him to the Judicial Review Board of the state or whatever, there's no problem in giving his name to them. Look, they're not going to do anything anyway, probably. But, you know, if you throw it in there and you throw it in there, even these guys themselves, if they get enough of that stuff, you know, sometimes they'll move and they'll actually remove a judge, because what happens is, look, they got to keep some of the people happy and they got to give an appearance of doing something.
Right.
And I had one guy in tell me, he said, look, you don't think they're doing anything with them, but they do sometimes. So I don't know how good it is or how bad it is, but at least if you're just informing them that this guy abused you in this and that way, and it needs to be you, it needs to be the guy he abused. I don't think they give a crap if anybody that's sitting in the court and you say, well, this judge did this or that holds a lot less weight than saying, I went to court and he did this to me, and now I'm telling you. Now, that's another nail in the system's coffin. The fact that they're getting these things, and if they're not doing anything with them, you know, they're falling down on the job. Look, they're getting paid for this, and some of them are volunteer. Some of them, the judicial review boards, are retired judges that get together. Now, I know in New York, they had a judicial review board that was, I believe it was retired judges. And when our governor came in, the federal government told him, you need to close that down because they're over there robbing in the probate court. And he said, they're more corrupt than the people who are corrupt, because they knew all, because they sat there and they had all the information and they went and raided these cases. So I don't know what to tell you on that, except for, you know, you're throwing it out there for whatever it's worth. You're not asking them anything. Maybe you're just noticing them, that this judge is no good. You know, maybe if they get enough of them. Right now, there's something going on. Like John says, the ground is starting to shake a little bit. You know, we got this federal prosecutor that has prosecuted, and they've actually convicted some notorious politicians for years, criminals in our court system. You know, Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos. These are guys, they're like the Teflon Don in New York City. This is like the Gambinos and you know, the regular crime bosses. So they're throwing some people under the bus now. So they must
right.
be feeling some heat. So that's all I'll say.
Right. But just with one last thing, with those papers that you had Carl posted up, and Carl didn't realize it, you know, any paper that gets posted up, we need to look at it from the legal standpoint, from the common law standpoint, to make sure it belongs. And it's not necessarily that there's anything wrong with those paperworks, but it clearly is not for the courtroom observers. You know, the call to action is for people to focus in on the weekly call to action. And we tell them some ideas on what to say when you call and what to tell them, how to identify yourself, what kind of an attitude. We give bullet points, you know, to say you could cover this or cover that or cover the other thing. And then,
right.
of course, we give the information. And we should make the note to anybody that does attend the court that they please, you know,
well,
make sure to bring a pencil and paper. But they are told this. But hold on. They are told this at the meetings. They should all know that. And they should know that they need to write an affidavit. So you come to the court, you're going to sit there with a paper and pen, give some notes, and you're going to get the contact information of the victim. And then when you leave, you get your affidavit together, just type it up, get it notarized, and then get it to the victim. Now, they're collecting those affidavits for further use. They'll get us a copy, and we'll use that in the next step maybe or something of that nature. So,
right, and that was my main concern.
Place. We didn't want it there because we
right.
don't want people to think that they need to be doing more than what we need. The phone calls, we need people coming.
Right.
We don't want people to do those other activities.
I understand that.
The public pressure is the greatest thing that we've seen so far. I mean, some of these cases have broken over based on the number of phone calls and the amount of people that showed up in court. Very powerful, way more powerful than calling a judicial review board. You know, so to maybe some corrupt judge sitting there, who knows? But anyway,
right.
it's the public pressure, and it's turning the light on that really, really shakes them loose.
Right. I just didn't want the people that were going to actually show up and be courtroom observers as witnesses to any case just to go to waste. I mean, I know it's an intimidation factor, and I know that they're a witness to the case, but. The reason why I provided those forms is because it's just something I've been working on, and I wanted to, you know, see, just make sure that everyone had something to at least follow up with or write down. And I'm not really that concerned about them being up or not. I'm just more concerned about the witnesses just their witness not fading. You know what I mean? Like when they go there and then all these other cases show up and all these other things in life start happening, and then their memory starts fading with what actually happened and what was said. And I just didn't see anything available to really inform people to do that or instruct them on, you know, to make sure that they follow up with that.
Yeah, we just got the page up, but I'm glad you brought it up because I'm going to make that point in writing on the page also for those who do go to the courts to make, you know, an affidavit up for that. And, you know, they love to tell you, this is kind of going off base here a little bit, but I'd like to bring this up. They love to tell you that common law is gone or there is no common law. Especially when a sheriff says something like that, then you know, the response to those people should be, okay, what you're saying is the Constitution is no more, because the Constitution, Seventh Amendment, requires a common law court to convict me. You have to go to a common law court. So you're saying that doesn't apply no more, that we've gotten rid of that? And by the way, the Supreme Court has ruled numerous times that the Constitution could not be understood outside of the common law. It's a common law document. It was founded under common law principles. Read the Declaration of Independence. So you're telling me that we don't have a Declaration of Independence no more, we don't have a Constitution anymore, there is no Bill of Rights, and it's not an unalienable right. And so, because they're saying, you know, by what authority do you come as the grand jury? You know, who gave you? Well, we don't need approval from an elected individual. As a matter of fact, it's an unalienable right. We don't have to ask permission to exercise our unalienable right, do we? You see, that's how you want to respond to these people and to put them into the mode where they can't come back at you, okay? When they start to understand that, hopefully they're going to start thinking and reading. And hopefully they'll come to our site and think and read, because they'll get the truth and nothing but the truth.
Okay. Thank you. I have Connecticut Crystal still open if she's there, or if it's anybody else. It ends in 111. Otherwise, I'm going to move to the next question. Five, four, three, two, one. Okay.
Maybe she fell asleep.
We have, well, I'm glad I could participate in that, helping that. I've just unmuted Jan, excuse
probably
me.
Probably having nightmares.
Jan, God is love in Michigan. Hello, fellas.
Hey, Jan, how's it going?
All righty. Hey, one of those gentlemen asked a question they had, which is about Ms. Pollock. Other ones prior to those, we had Don Jobson Bryan. He presented his case before the judge very nicely, and yet he was blown off. Do we have any blown off in the sense that the judge just kind of like, yeah, I'll hear what you have to say, but, you know, that's about it. Do we have any feedback from any court observers or any of the people that made phone calls as to where that's headed? Or also,
well,
one of the
we haven't started calls on that yet. I don't know if I'm looking to see who is up for this week. This week we have two people. Let's see. One is case information for Polson, Ronald Polson.
No, Brian was up
the,
like two.
And the
Brian
other one is
like...
Mabel Marson. Mabel
Jeff.
Marson. What?
Brian was up about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but we have not, I don't know where the courtroom observers were going at that point and what they were doing as far as monitoring it to know. At this point, we've taken a whole new monitoring system, and it kind of took a little time to get up, but it just started last week, and it started with Maud's case. As a matter of fact, we only did one case last week. We're doing two cases a week. But it's not that it's left in the background or left alone, because we're not done with that case. We're not done with any case. We've got so many things we can do, and we're going to execute and exercise everything we can do until we start to feel comfortable with these indictments. Now, I'll tell you what, I think the thing that's going to get us in the door pretty soon, okay, as far as indictments are concerned, is this mortgage thing. Because they're acting in rem, and they're not, they're coming in, they're saying they have fiduciary authority over you, and they have a claim. But they don't have what's required now of them in both their fiction and in fact. What's required of them is two forms to be filled out in order to get the fiduciary authority and a proof of claim. One is the Form 4490, and the other one is the Form 56. And those are federal forms, and they must be filed in a federal court within the district of where they're going to seize a piece of property from. That's the beginning. Okay, and that starts the process that they might be able to come, or they think they can come out in rem to take it, which means coming at them as a pirate. But you see, what the real game, I think, is, and I've been puzzling over this for a while, but I think the real game is this. Look, if you look at your title when you get a mortgage and you get your title for your property, and whether you have a mortgage or not, you get your title, you'll find out that when you read through that, you're a tenant. Now, wait a second. Why would the owner of the property be called a tenant? Now, that doesn't always there. When there was allodial titles, that kind of language was not in there. But now they have these other titles, and I don't know. Do they have another name for this title? I know we have the allodial title. These, statutory titles, do they have another name to it or just title?
Property I don't title? Know. They're deeds. It's a deed.
Deeds. Yeah. I guess a deed. Okay. So in the deed, they're calling them a tenant, which means someone else owns it. And you see, this is where the banks are coming in with this nonjudicial foreclosures. This is where the towns are coming in with this nonjudicial tax seizures and things. But they're nervous in the service, okay? They're very, very nervous. The judges aren't signing the papers for seizures. They use a con job, okay? They file the paperwork. They go through the execution, non-judicial processes, and as if it's legal or something, and it's all done in rem, and it's done under the federal certain federal guidelines, which is doesn't work on the land. It's really for at sea. But nevertheless, they don't have fiduciary authority, don't have proof of claim. That has to be sworn to. It doesn't exist. So they violate it right off the bat. That's missing. Okay? So the judge is afraid to sign the papers to give them the seizure process. Because then when he signs that paper and passes it over to the sheriff now can come and seize the property. Well, if the sheriff doesn't understand that, once he understands it, he becomes part of the crime. But in any event, the sheriff will do that. That judge that judge's flesh is on the line at this point. That's why they bypass it, and they go about, they turn the property name, title, they'll go, and it takes them 2 months to do it. Meanwhile, they're sending eviction notices to the victim, and then when everything's ready to go, then they go to landlord's court or the town court, which is for the landlords to come in and say, I got a tenant, and they're not paying their rent, and I want to throw them out, and then they evict them. So when the sheriff comes out, he's going through an eviction process and not a seizure process. There was no due process in any way, shape, or form, and that is RICO. Okay? That is the that's the definition of a RICO right there, that process. And that's what we need to let the sheriff know. And by the way, Mr. Sheriff, just so you understand, because we really don't want to see you get into trouble here, if you go along with this, you enter into the conspiracy of RICO. If you do nothing, you enter into the conspiracy of RICO. Okay? So you have two choices, resign your office or enforce the law. That's your only choices you have, Mr. Sheriff. And you see, this is what we have to drill into these people. And it's going to take time, and we're going to do it, you know, patiently and gently and with brotherly love. We're going to be nice to these people. You know, look it, they're as dumb as we were. We're not dumb anymore. We used to be dumb. So, you know, if not by the grace of God, there go I. They didn't know. Now they know. They've been fully informed. And that's what we write on the paper. We let the judge know. You have been fully informed. Means go to jail, do not pass go, do not collect your $200 because you've been fully informed. And if you go through with this process, you're going to jail. But, you know, we have to work that next part of the process to put them in jail. This is really, it's almost a gift horse, really, to be honest with you. It's like it hit me just the other day. Wow, you know what? This is our leverage. This is the leverage to make the sheriff do the right thing, do an indictment, report the crime, and give him the indictment, put it into the court, and then get on top of it to make sure they get a common law jury here and we don't have this statutory courts going on or no felony rescue going on. You know, we got to get everybody we can to that courtroom, okay, when that case comes down the pike and make sure. And we're not going to put up with 6 years of trial. There's no reason. These trials are cut and dry. They could be done in one day, game over, time over, that's it. There's no reason to go through all this. It's a no-brainer. Lay out the paperwork, show what they've done, show it to a jury, and they will convict. So anyway, it may be a gift horse for us. It really is something that we're going to use to leverage in.
I like the general ideas that were posted to give us some ideas as what to say to the people that we call, like to the sheriff, what to say to the sheriff. Some guidance in that, some script playing that is good.
Yeah, if anybody's got any more to add, I don't know if you got any more to add, just get a hold of, you know, if you can't get a hold of me, get a hold of Gary, get a hold of Carl, get a hold of even, you know, Gerard and Linda or me, get a hold of somebody and say, as a matter of fact, well, let me think about this. The person to get a hold of is Carl, because Carl is at this point running the committee. So if you have some more ideas, and everybody should go to the page. Look at everybody right now should go to directory, nationallibertyalliance.org, go to directory, highlight directory, committees. Highlight committees, and we're going to put this another place too. But right now, highlight committees, come to courtroom observers, okay, then click on call to action. And when you get to call to action, down on the bottom, you'll see some ideas, see bullet points below. So as you come down, you'll see here's some mortgage fraud, explain some information that you might want to know in order to talk to these people. But then we have a list of general ideas, okay? And this is the thing. You know, we give, for instance, be polite, be professional, be principled. Say something, I'm calling to help the victim in whatever case number it is and give the person's name. Give your first name. Tell them, I'm on the grand jury. I'm with the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury through my state and so on and so forth. There's some more language in on that. Tell them that they are the constitutional authority if you're talking to the sheriff. You know, let them know, hey, we've been sending memorandums to you or memos. Have you been getting them? You've been reading. You know, tell them about common law. We have a lot of good ideas here of things they could be talking to the sheriff or to the the judge. So anybody got any more ideas when you look at that, get them to call, and let's get them up here.
And along those lines, I just want to say, like, in a particular case, sometimes there's a particular constitutional point that they violated. And sometimes you're going to want the people to say, why, Your Honor, why was this done in a violation of due process or a violation, you know what I mean? If it sticks out blaringly, make sure that you get that to Carl so he can put it in a sentence for them to ask the judge. Because sometimes you have a particular thing that really sticks out. And if he gets, you know, that's an opportunity to really stick that like a stake through the heart of the judge. If he keeps hearing that when people are calling, oh, they're calling, they want to know why we did this or why we did that, on a specific thing like that, if it sticks out. You don't always have one thing that sticks out, but sometimes you got a glaring problem that sticks out, and that's what you want to ask the judge.
Like it says here, to the sheriff, ask if he's going to protect Mabel's right of due process. Now, which due process? Like, if there would be some more information as to what is defined by...
There's only one due process. Due process is a hearing in a common law court. It's in a court of record. In other words, you're going to have a jury, and they're going to make the decision. Summary judgment is when the judge makes the decision, and that is not permitted. If you're coming in on a civil case, you know, you're suing someone, it's a contract, you can choose to have a judge make the decision. If it's over $20, then you have the option of calling for the jury. Okay, and in today's environment, I'd call for the jury and everything. But nevertheless, in any criminal act, if someone is in a situation that they're going to lose property, life, liberty, or their children, okay, due process is a requirement. A judge cannot make a summary decision, a judgment on any of those issues. None, ever, forever. It's not common law. It's not the law of the land. He cannot do it. It must be the people to take that person's children. It must be the people to decide to put this person in jail or seize their property or whatever it is that they're going to do. The people must decide, not the court. And when it comes to taking someone's children, boy, you better be really careful. And by the way, you know, even if, let's say the children are being abused, maybe it is necessary to take the children away, okay? But you don't take it away from the family. You give that child back to the family, okay? And you bring that family in to discuss the fact that this is serious business. This child is being injured, and we're going to now count on you and keep an eye to make sure that this child doesn't just get back into the hands of this individual. And now, also at the same, on the other side of this coin, the child has the right to his parents, his or her parents. And so, therefore, they should have the ability to visit this child. And in this case, yeah, there may have to be supervisory visits and things of that nature. And it's a shame that people would destroy and hurt their children like that. But I truly believe that that is pretty rare. And I think a lot of the cases where these children really are abused and they are injured, whether, you know, physically or mentally, however it is, I think most of those cases are in cases where it's not their children, cases where these are the people that generally are supposed to be taking care of, the foster parents or the adoptive parents. They maybe have alternative motives on why they got the child or whatever the case may be. I don't know. But I think it's usually rare when there is an intention of an individual to harm and injure their own child. Now, of course, people do this unknowingly, you know, and they have to be counseled in order to realize that they're injuring their child. Some people don't realize how much they're injuring their child, maybe psychologically. Some people may think a real strong hand of physical punishment is necessary. And look, at sometimes a spanking is required. You have to figure that out and pray for wisdom to do that. But nevertheless, people abuse that too. They get angry. You know, that you can correct those problems. Those problems are correctable, you know. But then you have the really extreme cases, which I'm sure are out there, and we have to deal with them.
You mentioned summary judgment. That's something that's been done to me and ordered. So what do you say to the judge? You can't do that.
90% of the court cases going on today is done under summary judgment. Yeah, every town court is summary judgment. Every city and village court is running under summary judgment. Traffic court, summary judgment. Even in the Supreme Court, summary judgment. You can go in. I remember when we went in, and in our ignorance, and we were young and learning in law, we were young, and we were in the School of Hard Knocks, and we actually asked the judge, you know, a jury trial requested. What do you mean requested? No, jury trial, period, required. Okay, but we didn't know then, okay? And, of course, hey, he's giving me the choice. Well, you ain't getting a jury trial. We never got a jury trial. They did a summary judgment. As a matter of fact, it was really kind of ridiculous and funny and serious at the same time, because in our first case, when the judge made a decision, he ruled for us, then overruled himself, you know? He says, well, you know, this is the way it should be, blah, blah, blah. But for my own conscience, like this man has a conscience, you know, in my own conscience, I have to consider the case from another perspective, and for that reason, you can't have what you want. You can't be free. Go away, slave. So, again, you know, these people, they deny you juries. They deny. We got a judge, a federal judge, which we're ready to deal with this guy, a federal judge who denied our habeas corpus that we've already sent through, approved, and went through the process. And he denied the habeas corpus. He made it to say, what is this guy, insane? Okay? You know, they think that they actually have the ability to deny someone a habeas corpus. I mean, the only way they can deny someone a habeas corpus is that there just is no case here to have a habeas corpus. They have nothing. Okay? You know, if they don't have nothing, then you can't give them a habeas corpus. But look it, if you say this is chancery jurisdiction, these people are operating not under the Constitution but under some other system, and it's not due process, and I'm challenging that due process. Just the words, I challenge, I'm not getting due process, I challenge what they're giving me as being due process, that's a reason for habeas corpus. They got to prove that they have jurisdiction and that their jurisdiction and their court is given due process.
So you could just say in court, you're denying my due process.
All day long. Look it. You just challenge the jurisdiction all the time and you let them know they don't have it. You know, look it. Is this a common law court? Does this proceed according to the rules of common law? Or the rules of chancery, which is a judge.
Well, that's in the habeas corpus anyway. It's in there. We have that in our paperwork.
Absolutely.
So when the judge does a summary judgment after the habeas corpus, she's expected to know the law. They have no excuse, she or he, excuse me.
Right.
You know, so it's in there. We do talk about, you know, the jurisdiction and the judge's duty. So they're not innocent here. They're just arrogant. But
yeah,
anyway.
And they blow off the contempt of court, so next thing is indictment.
Well, that's what's going to happen, and we're working on enforcement, and they're going to be very surprised when they get arrested and they find themselves sitting behind bars. That's going to be the beginning of the end for this system. So that's what we're working to.
What we have to know and what we have to believe is that it's only a matter of time, okay? And when we know and we believe and we act with the knowledge that it's only a matter of time, they believe. Look it, when you walk into a courtroom, you put your axe on your shoulder, you walk into that courtroom and you start taking off heads, okay? When that judge realizes that you're not holding anything back, and then when he puts his fingers out there, you take off his fingers, when he realizes that, that's when he starts to fear the people. He starts to get worried about you. What do you really know? Am I in danger? Am I at risk? He wants that case to go away. That's all he wants. I want that case to get out of here. Okay? And so that's how people look at you. Have to believe in order for them to believe. So we have to come with surety. We have to be absolutely, you know, understanding that we're going to achieve our goal, but we're going to do it only with patience. And we're just going to move step by step, right? And we're heading towards that mark. Every time we do something, we get closer to the mark. We're working our way to the mark. We're going to get there, okay? And when they start to realize this, and they do, look at When do they open their eyes? When they see that we're not just a couple of people. When they see that we're well organized across the nation, that we have a presence in every state, that we have thousands of members, that we have name recognition, okay, and that our paperwork is stellar, that it is really in great order. It's constitutional. It's common law. It's undeniable. Okay, because we use the same United States Supreme Court rulings that they're supposed to be using. We use them. And they know. When they finally look, you know, it's like that judge in Utah, we're terrorists. 1 month we were terrorists. The next month, oh, these people, they're concerned citizens. And I'm going to have to let him go. Where before he was held, the month before he was held without bail. He was held as a terrorist, and he belonged to a group of people that were dangerous, and he was a danger to the community. And the next month, it was a 180-degree turnaround, and this was the fixer. So you see, that tells you something. This kind of little thing tells you something. And when a judge comes into the courtroom and they're asked, did you read the paperwork from the grand jury? I don't read paper, or I don't read letters, or I don't read communications. I mean, she didn't know what to say, and that was a much safer thing to say, so she thought, but all she did was stick a foot in the mouth. She put both feet in the mouth on that one, okay? She doesn't read anything that comes into a court. Are you serious? Okay? So anyway, what that says is she's saying to her at this point, I don't know what to do. I don't know to go right or left. I'm nervous that these people, my colleagues are suggesting go forward. Of course, it's not their skin on the thing. Maybe they should go forward. Maybe I should get out of here. I don't want to make a ruling. I'll tell you what's going to happen. I think on the 9th or the 8th, if it comes to that point and they don't let her go before this, okay, and step away from this thing, you're probably going to see another judge on the bench. And we'll call that judge at this point another victim, okay? But we'll have to put the pressure on that. But we're going to put different kind of pressure anyway. And again, we're going to expound on this new kind of pressure we're going to put once we write up the plan on how to approach this. Well, not how to approach this. We already know how to approach it. When we write up the plan on how they execute their ruse. Is that properly? Ruse. It's the right way to say it, right? Ruse. Anyway, When we reveal their ruse, okay, and it could go a couple of different ways. I've noticed that there's at least three different kinds of ways they go. Depending on what their victim does, they'll go plan A. The victim does something else, they'll go plan B. And the victim does something else, they're going to go plan C. So far I see that they go three different routes, but it all brings them to the same place with an eviction and never a seizure. And that's the key. You see, if they got to go... That in itself shows the crime. You got to go and do an eviction on someone on a place that really should be a seizure. You know, that should tell it all. That sheriff should understand that right away. But anyway.
Thank you.
We should move on. Thanks, JP.
Mm-hmm.
Gerard?
Hello.
I'm talking away here. I was going.
No, we ain't listening to a word you're saying.
Well, pay attention.
We like it like that. Put that mute button back.
Okay. Who do we have here? Is this? It says Josie Maine.
No, this is Jim out of Maine. And the guy earlier said something about the Jobson case, and I got some good news for you guys about that. When he defended himself in court, and as he was walking out, of course, the judge blew him off, but the judge has a vendetta. And I know the judge has been telling the jail to put pressure on him by shutting off or keeping the air conditioner on in his cell, and then on top of that, not giving them a blanket, and not giving him shoes for his feet, and his back is killing him. But the judge knows he's coming under indictment, so he's trying to get Brian Jobson to break first. But back to when he was in court, as he's walking out with the sheriff turns to him and says, you know, in all my years of doing this, I've never seen a prisoner defend himself the way you have. the sheriff was very impressed. And he says, well, yeah, Brian then turned to him and said this. He said, look, he said, if they indict the judge, will you serve the papers? And the sheriff said, yes, I will. So he asked for Brian's paperwork on the power of the sheriff, because Brian had that with him. And he says, well, I can't give you my copy. He says, but if you go to the NLA website, and he said, if you look it up, he said, it's all there. And in his conversation with the sheriff about this, Brian had said, well, do you know what kind of power you have as sheriff? And he says, well, I do know that I have a lot more power than the state police. And he says, but I'm not aware. So the good point here is that this sheriff is becoming aware. And if he becomes aware, more sheriffs become aware. So there's going to be a domino effect here. That is going to really, I think, bankroll this whole thing, because these sheriffs don't like to go out amongst their constituents and do foreclosures on properties, or to circumvent the rights of the citizens and think, oh, well, I'm doing okay, I'm doing right, and this is how it's done, when the fact is, no, it's not done that way, and you are breaking the law, and you can be held accountable as an aider and abettor. And that's not a separate crime. That's as if you did the crime yourself. So the bottom line here is that they're trying to get him to break. They're trying to get his mother to break, okay? And it's all the game of how much time do I have to do this? So this judge is trying to do this before he gets indicted. And I think you guys have already sent out the indictment.
Well, no, we sent out the contempt of court with opportunity to amend, and we always have to give them opportunity to amend, to fix their error. After all, they may have made a mistake, and they may have misspoke or whatever, and here's your opportunity to fix it. And that's where we're at. But, yeah, we're ready. That judge is in our scopes as one of the first focuses of because of his attitude. And he's not the only one. We got a few of them, but that's one of them. He's definitely in our scopes. And we definitely, unless he repents before we pull the trigger, so to speak, you know, put the indictment through, unless he repents, he's done. We're not going to give him a second chance after that. You know, look at this is the plan of NLA, is to educate the sheriff, and here is a perfect example of something, and we're getting this interest here and this entrance there. You know, look at, we have 3,143 sheriffs, so to speak. It's actually less than that, because let's say 3,100 sheriffs or 50 sheriffs, because there's no sheriffs in Alaska, there's no sheriffs in Connecticut. And there's a few other states. New York is missing 7 sheriffs. And a few other states are missing some sheriffs. California?
California might be one, but...
No, California has sheriffs. They do have sheriffs.
Yeah, that's right. But, I remember a case that happened about Agenda 21, and they got together with people in Oregon. Right. I misspoke. Yeah.
But the thing is this, look, it's one at a time, okay? And that's how we're going to save America, one person at a time. National Liberty Alliance started with a handful of people. And look at where we're at. We are one of, if not one of the largest liberty groups in the nation, okay? And we are the only one with a plan, a real solid, rock-solid plan to save America. Given time, we absolutely will achieve our goal. It's a no-brainer. We cannot not lose. Double negative means we can lose. We cannot not win. We cannot not win. Yes, that's it. Double negative. Okay, but we cannot lose. Okay, the only thing is if actual you know, physical war breaks out between these tyrants and the people, only at that point you know, it's a whole different ballgame until we get back. But again, you know, it really boils down to simplicity. I see it as so simple, it's pathetic. And if people can get it and fix it in their head and work with it, it's just do the right thing. If you're here with National Liberty Alliance, you're seeing something. You're realizing that there's a good, solid plan here, that there's an opportunity for we, the people, to save America. And with that, the only thing you have to do is the right thing. And if we're all doing the right thing, we cannot fail because we will receive the blessings of God. And as God has said, and we read this earlier on, I am going to come and I'm going to save you. I'm going to save you. I'm going to protect you. I am a vengeful God, and his vengeance is righteousness. Okay, I'm a vengeful God, and I will save you. And I believe that. And if everyone can believe that and just do the right thing, the big picture will work out all on its own, because light is the best cleanser.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you shine light onto the evil and the darkness, and it runs for cover. So I agree totally. Now, there was a second point that I wanted to bring up in your earlier discussion. Actually, it was the original reason I chimed in, and it was about corporations. People have been doing a UCC-1 filing and naming their corporate name, their all caps name, as their property. And where in the UCC filing, judges can't deny it because of the fact that, hey, wait a minute, you know, he's claiming that his corporate name is different than his real name, so it's a way to circumvent court. Now, I don't know if you've seen that or heard that, but it works.
Well, it worked early on, and it possibly could get through in a court here or a court there, but generally speaking, it doesn't get through, and it definitely does not get through in the federal level. In order to get through the court, judge must feel intimidated by you. So you have to figure out how you can intimidate that judge. And that's a difficult thing to do. In a federal court, it's easier because they're much more educated and they know what you're talking about when you start talking about certain things in common law. You know, I'll tell you what, the thing that I thought was one of the most powerful things in the courtroom when I was in a federal court on a case that I did was bringing up the fact that they didn't have fiduciary authority. They also did not have a proof of claim. There was no 4490, no 56 form filed out and filed with the court, and so therefore right there. You see, the judge understood that. Now, there was a lot of other things I had to say, and it was all in the paperwork, really, but there's a lot of other things I had to say, but that was one of the most powerful ones because, you see, they can't go forward without that, all right? Now, also, there's just a lot of things on that particular case that we had. But you have to be able to intimidate the judge and put his flesh on the line. You see, if he feels that he can't close this case up and make sure that it's cleansed enough that nobody can ever come back and look in that case and come up against him for something, and they do cleansing, you know. So if he feels that there's going to be something left that puts him at risk in the future, that someone may dig it up, he's going to get that out of his court. And they do. So, but as far as using the certain pressures of playing the game with the caps and also, you know, trying to work your process and standing in the court, it doesn't work anymore. Now, I do know that it's been a while since we listened into Your Remedy is the Law, where they have a lot of people who have been fighting in the court cases and doing certain things. But, you know, one of the things, you know, when someone goes in and does something a little unique, okay, and they are able to defeat them with that unique thing using standing in their courts and are able to get away with it, after that case is over, they do the tighten up and they start to close up that hole. And the next person that comes in, they have a strategy in order to thwart that strategy or that process they're trying to do. So it's not as easy anymore. What used to work 20 years ago, with the constitutional man, I'm trying to think of his name, Miller.
Carl Miller.
Yeah, Carl Miller. What he was doing 20, 30 years ago, he'd walk into a courtroom and he'd put the fear of the Constitution into these judges' hearts. And what worked back then, doesn't work today anymore. They educate these judges in certain ways as they feel comfortable and confident, okay? But again, if you can break them and get, if you can speak pure language, okay, and, you know, coming in there and talking about the preamble to the Constitution, the purpose, and Article 6, and how they must, all judges must obey the law of the land, and also in Section 4 of Article 4, that, you know, that the United States guarantees every state of the union a republican form of government, which is a government of law and a constitution. And you start to really rattle that off and lay it in there and talk about the courts and the right to, you know, the Seventh Amendment right, the Fifth Amendment right, due process, and so on and so forth, and stick with that. You might be able to rattle his cage if he's educated enough. But if you got a moron, and, you know, pretty much town courts, village courts, city courts, county courts, all of those are filled with morons, okay? These guys are as dumb as a box of rocks, and they have no clue of the danger that they're in when they play the game that they play, because they're true believers. Now, of course, there are some that aren't that dumb, but generally speaking, they are true believers, and they're taught in their little school of judge school how to operate and how to recognize people like us, which they categorize as, you know, maybe sovereign citizens, terrorists, and all that stuff. And they really feel confident in what they got, that they think they know something that nobody else knows. You know, and that's arrogance. And they're not thinkers. And that's the big thing. That's that. You know, there's nothing more dangerous than an ignorant judge. You know. Because
well, you know, you're right about that. Because when I was in New York, I was fighting the driving without a license. My whole ploy was when I went in, I sat down, and when the judge came in and they all rise, I remained seated because that could be construed as abdicating your authority to the judge. And when he called my name, I just looked at him. I says, "Your Honor, if I have." And I didn't rise, and I didn't do that. But I looked at him, and I said, "Excuse me." I said, "If I approach the bench, will that be entering into a contract with you or with this court?" And he didn't answer that. And he said, "Well, you approached the bench during the arraignment." I says, "Yes, but there was no flag in the court, and that's an admiralty flag."
Yeah, but you see, you know, all that, I don't know if you realize by doing those things, you're giving reality to fiction. You realize that. You're giving him power. Because you're acknowledging the fact that if you genuflect before him, that then therefore he has the power. And look at, if you go through the process and you say, okay, when I went into a federal court the first time, I refused to approach the bench. That was a bad decision for me. My case was so rock solid, though, we had such good paperwork that it didn't matter that I didn't approach the bench. But nevertheless, next time, I'll go right through that bench. It means nothing to me. If you're going to tell me that means something that I don't know about, it's irrelevant and it's a fraud anyway. And it's all fiction anyway, and I don't acknowledge the fiction. The fiction is fiction. It's not a reality, you know.
Well,
and that's a fictional court from day one because it's been incorporated. It's acting under a court. In this case, in the federal, it's under the United States of America, but it's under the corporation that they're operating in. If it's a state, they're operating under the state corporation. And once they're operating under the corporation, that in itself, you know, a corporation has no power and authority over a living individual, okay, over the people.
They try to trick you into a corporation.
Yeah, but it's irrelevant, though. Give it no mind. It's irrelevant. Look at the bottom line. You walk into that courtroom, you only got two things that you're interested in. Number one, do they have jurisdiction? And if they do have jurisdiction, are you going to get due process? Those are the only two things you should be concerned about, and you need to get out of that court as quick as possible because they don't have jurisdiction and they're not going to give you due process. So you have to figure out how to get out of that court, and that just requires you to file papers in another court.
I challenged jurisdiction even in the paperwork that I sent them. I think I sent you a copy of that when I was living in Pennsylvania.
I don't know, but, you know, a lot of people just, I'd like to say this, take the opportunity to say this at the moment. I've said it in the past. People send me papers, and I have no idea what they're sending me. People send me, you know, I get sometimes things 2-3 inches thick, an inch thick.
You asked me to send it to.
Oh, well, if I was doing something and asked for something, that's a different story. But people send me things out of the blue on cases that I'm not involved with. And that might have been at a time when I was given advice on cases, which I don't do anymore because we're really focused in on saving the nation. But and I can't get lost in my time. And also, that's a wedge that they'll try to get me for teaching silly things, which they can't do at this point. But in any event... you know, anybody that does send me these things, I don't have time to read someone's court case and give advice on it. It's just I just don't have it, and so it doesn't really go anywhere unless I've asked for something. Now I do ask people sometimes to send me things, and the safest way to get me something like that is to go through Linda, because Linda transfers files directly all the time, and she gets them. You know, I may miss them in my email if they're sending me, or they've got to get me on Skype and deliver it straight through Skype, and I get it, deal with it right away. But again, it's got to be something that I'm working on with habeas corpus and involved with what we're doing. But we'd stay really right on point. Any paperwork that I'm involved with really is the paperwork that we generate for the sole purpose with an affidavit, the habeas corpus petition, and the habeas corpus itself, and then the paperwork we file. And I keep my files very clean and focused on just the facts and just the process we're working. If a letter comes out, we'll get a copy of that letter and we'll respond to that letter. And of course, that goes into the record for that person. Now, Linda may collect a lot of other information that might be pertinent for the future, but I don't need to see it because, again, we're cut and dry. We're challenging jurisdiction. And guess what? They don't have it, and they never will. And that's what makes what we're doing so powerful. And they're frustrated by this. Even though they're doing stupid things and they think we got them here. They don't know what to do if we do this or if we do that. Well, they'll get frustrated because we do know what to do, and we have been able to find the next step. And that's how we're going to win. You know, it's going to be an endurance. It's all about endurance.
Yeah. Now, one last question. How close do you think you are on the Jobson case?
I can't say because, again, it's a matter of how educated. It sounds like that sheriff up there, which is probably not the sheriff. It's probably a deputy. And the question is the sheriff as wise as the deputy? You know, we had a situation. I had a friend that I met. He turned out he was a deputy sheriff, and he was a high-ranking deputy sheriff. And he also was a leader of one of the Liberty groups. He started a Liberty group. He went to the county next door to do it. And from talking to him, you know, he was kind of unsure of this. He understood. He knew what was going on. But the sheriff was still kind of fugazi and still a little political. And, you know, he thinks he'd do the right thing, but he wasn't sure, you know. So you may get a deputy that's on board with it, but not a sheriff. Now, I have had a deputy write me a letter and request booklets, and we sent them, you know, 50 or 100 constitutional booklets and also our grand jury booklets, the jurist, sheriff, and judge booklet, and, you know, free of charge. We just send it to them. And in that particular state, they were having some problems, and I think it was, if I recall, it was a state where they had a sheriff and they had no vehicles. And the county refused to buy him vehicles because they were supplying some other police force, you know, and they were feeding them into the corporate police force, but they didn't give the sheriff what he needed. So the sheriff and the deputies, there's only a few of them, they were riding around in their own cars, and they still are. So I sent all this paperwork, you know, all these booklets to him, and I sent him a nice little note, and I included all the memos we had written and the power of the sheriff and everything and so on. And I let him know in a letter, look, you know, this is a violation of the people, ultimately. They have to secure the sheriff. It's an absolute requirement, first and foremost, and they're the top cop. And if they needed our assistance in order to get into the courts and pressure this county to fulfill their duty and take care of the show, we'd be willing to go out there and do this in the courts with them for them. Now, I haven't heard anything back from this sheriff on that. But you see, he wasn't the sheriff. He was a deputy sheriff. I don't know what ranking he was, but he was a deputy sheriff. And I don't know what's in the mind of the sheriff. So he may not be as, focused in and on us and what we're doing than the deputy is. So we don't know. But we're definitely going to take opportunity.
Okay, well, that was about all I pretty much had. And I thank you, John, for everything you're doing. I mean, you give hope. The only thing I can say is that if they pull the trigger on World War III and they allow all those jihadists into this country to ignite holy war in this country,
I do not believe that's going to happen.
I don't believe
that's going to happen. I do not believe that these people are going to get what they're looking to get. It looks like they're very close. Look, we're up between the rock and the hard place, okay? The sea is behind us, and the Egyptians are coming forward to us, and we are in trouble, okay? But it's not going to happen because I don't believe God's going to permit it. Look, if they achieve their goal, it's hell on earth, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And God's will be done. Okay, and he just, we're at the end of the world anyway, from all that I can perceive. That's my strong opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And we're so close, I don't see God giving us up to that kind of stuff. You know, sure, we deserve everything we get. You know, we don't have the problems we have because of the prince of this world. We don't have the problems that we have because of the demoralization of America and all of that stuff. We don't have the problems because we have tyrants in the judiciary and we have tyrants in our political arenas. You know, that's not why we are where we are. We are where we are because we have not been doing the right thing. But look, this is what happened to the Jews. This is what happened in many places throughout history when you read your Bible. And when they finally repented and realized, we're being punished because we rejected God. We're being punished because we chased after false gods. You know, we just rejected God and we became immoral. And when we realize that and we reverse that, that's when God does what he does for his children, his people. And that's why we're here where we're at. It's not because of them. It's because of us. And when we realize that, it's a different focus. It's a different approach. And it's just doing the right thing. Gets back to that always.
Oh, absolutely. We are the center of his eye. And
we're the apple of his eye, and I'm not saying that just because I'm in New York now. Anyway.
Okay, we got five or six other people. Let's
Sorry.
Move on. We haven't been on this a long time.
Hey,
we'll try to get the rest of them in here if we can.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we got Greenwood, I don't know, T.E., 4210. You've been unmuted.
Is that me?
That's you.
Okay. This is Gary from Illinois.
Yes.
I just thought I'd bring something up. I did a search on Google for Article 1, 2, and 4 courts. They seem to be territorial courts or martial law courts.
It's a figmentation of their imagination. They don't exist. Bring up the paragraphs, and I'll show you how it has nothing to do. You know, look at, here's one of the key things, Article 6. You have to read the whole paper in light of the paper to begin with. So even if people were to interpret another court and another system in another way, it still brings us back to Article 6 and the Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all treaties made of which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state in the Constitution, to the contrary notwithstanding. So right there, it eliminates it. The other thing is the unalienable rights, the right of due process, the Fifth Amendment, the Seventh, and other things you to a jury. But nevertheless, they go in here and they talk about what they call about the Article IV courts. And I'll give you an example of an Article IV courts. It says here in Article IV, Section 3, Paragraph 2, the Congress shall have power to dispose of. Now listen very carefully to this language, because this is the paragraph they claim gives them the ability to make what's called an Article IV court. The Congress shall have the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory of other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. Now, where in there do you see it said that they can create a court? It said that they can do the rules and regulations, the needful rules and regulations, okay? Now, the people are still people. They're people of God. They have unalienable rights. Our nation was built upon that idea of unalienable rights. And if people are in a territory and we have control over that territory, we have to give them that which we have ourselves. Otherwise, we're unfaithful to God also. But nevertheless, we don't even belong in these territories. We don't belong in the Philippines. We don't belong in Guam, Puerto Rico, and all these places that we've taken control over. You know, we don't belong there, okay? You know, look at there are courts there, and they're one of the 94 federal district courts, and those federal district courts were created under Article 3. And it says here in Article 3, Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States. Okay, there it is. Now, in Section 1 of Article 3, it says the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court. That's the U.S. Supreme Court. Only one. No, not two. One. Okay? And then it goes on to say, and in such inferior courts, those which are under the U.S. Supreme Court, as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. And we've come to the point where they've ordained and established 94 courts. Therefore, they've been vested, okay? We vested them. When it says here that Congress may from time to time ordain and establish, means we vested Congress with the power to ordain and establish in this area and this area only. And it says that the judges both, let me go back. And in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish, the judges both of the Supreme and the inferior courts shall hold offices during good behavior. What's good behavior? Constitutional behavior. Anything outside of constitutional behavior is bad behavior, and they can be removed by who? We the people, through the grand jury, through an indictment. Okay? So, that's it. You can't go any further. There is no other place in this Constitution where it talks about the creation of the court. That is it. Article 3. Article 3 courts are the only legal courts. Now, Article 1, I mean, that's a really sick one. I can't believe how they can even think about getting some power out of this one. And they go over to Article 1, and they go to Section, Section 8, Article 3, and it talks about the power of the legislature. This is the legislative power. Article 1 is legislative power. Okay. Article 2 is judicial power. Article 3 is administrative power. And they cannot act outside of the powers given them in those articles and enumerated. And in this case, there are 18 powers. Okay. And it goes on. One of the powers they have is to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or office thereof. Now, if you step one or two earlier here, it talks about, I think it's here. Let me make sure. Exercise legislative right or organizing, provide for the militia, the government regulations. Okay, I think it's the one before. To exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles. Okay, this is 10 square miles. This is the District of Columbia they're talking about, right here. Our founding fathers called it the federal city. But we've come to understand, and from the very beginning, they did move over to the idea of District of Columbia. But I really wish we would have stuck with the federal city. The federal city belongs to the 50 states. That's ours. That's the federal city. And it doesn't belong to something alienated from outside of the 50 states. But here they have the power, legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles, 10 square miles, as may be by the creation of particular states and the acceptance of Congress become the seat of the government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places, purchases by the consent and of the legislature of the states or the state in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. So that's spread throughout the United States. But they only have 10 square miles. And then, of course, the next one is to make all laws necessary to proper carrying out the execution of the foregoing, which includes that one there, number 17, and this is number 18. Now, what they are done is they then went out and they created an act that they had where they created the municipality. Now, where do you read in here that they have the power and authority to create the municipality outside of what I just read? Okay, and then they've taken that municipality and they gave it to foreigners, the foreign bankers, and you know, and the bar association, you know, all these people. Ultimately, you know, the very high rank, the high elite people. Okay, they've kind of taken ownership and they make their own laws. And if you read what's her name's papers, okay, Anna Van, whatever her last name, Van Ritz, okay. She talks as if they had the authority to do that. This is where they got their power. But they don't. They just made it up. The federal city was already in creation. The federal city has been defined as 10 square miles. The federal city, as far as the laws, has already been spoken about right here in Article 1, Section 8, where we read in the power of 17 and 18, particular 18 being able to write all the laws necessary for that state, for that that area, that federal city or the District of Columbia. So you see, everything else it's all a fraud. There is no Article 1 court. There is no Article 4 court. There's only an Article 3 court. That's all there is. And there's no language that can lead you anywhere to what they're saying. They apply legalese to this and then go out and write these stupid acts as if they, and then they create all this stuff. And we give it reality by adhering to it, by walking into these places and working our argument to get standing in a place that we don't want standing. I don't want to stand in there at all. And that's got to be our attitude. But with that, we've come to an end.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that we didn't make an incorrect statement there.
Mm-hmm. No, I appreciate
that.
Got
it down good.
Yeah, we're going to do an in-depth study of the Constitution and focus in on all these things so everybody can understand this, because we really need to understand this stuff. And it's not difficult. You know, anything that's new, it takes a little while. But once we kind of get into the mood of things and we start to work the lingo out, we get familiar, all of a sudden it becomes old hat and say, how come I didn't see it before? Because you really didn't work out the language before. And it's simple language. It really is very simple. And the whole thing is this. Here's the key thing. Let the Constitution, let our founding documents interpret itself. Don't get outside interpretation. Anything that interferes with the interpretation of itself, anything that is repugnant to it, in other words, is null and void and not part of it. And our founding fathers were so brilliant, that when they came in with the Bill of Rights, and they did it in such 10 little bills, okay, 10 little amendments, okay, that's all it took. And it's not long-winded at all. They're very short. It fits on one little page, okay? And yet that is so powerful that the entire Constitution is understood in light of those 10 amendments. So anything that violates any one of those 10 amendments is not the proper interpretation, and anything that is interpreted outside of harmony of those 10 amendments is null and void. And that's the principle set up in Marbury versus Madison in the very beginning, one of the biggest cases ever in the United States, and definitely a foundational decision for our government. So, but with that, we're going to have to end the evening. I want to thank everybody for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you again next Monday. And please, look, at we really need money. And I know a lot of, there's some people that keep giving. And every time I ask, they always throw something out and help us out. And we really appreciate that. And if you can continue to do that, by all means, look, at we're trying to save America. But those who haven't been given, you know, we really are pleading to you. Give us that $5 a month, or give us that $100 or whatever you can afford right now to help us get this paperwork out. Because without the paperwork, without the power of the pen, without bringing the light into these courts and putting it in front of them and educating these people and cleansing them and putting their sins on record, without doing that, America cannot be saved peacefully. This, in my understanding, is the only peaceful way to save America. If there's anything else out there to do it with, I haven't found it, and I've been looking for years. And when we found this, we knew we had it. And I think our members understand that, too. So, but with that, thanks, everybody. And again, Lord willing, next time. And don't forget, you know, come meet the King on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. right here in this room. Good night.
Thanks, John.